is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Poy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And we're back. Welcome back. John Murphy, Donald Jones, back in our familiar perch. One Bills Drive, the One Buffalo studio, to start a new half week after a couple of days off. Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us here until 3. Donald, good afternoon. Good to see you, buddy.
It's good to see you. Yeah, it's been a little while.
We've had a good break, a really nice long break. It was great, right? We had Thursday or Friday off, and then Monday and Tuesday, plus the weekend sandwich in between. Clear our heads, reset, look ahead to 2018. I thought it was the perfect time for a week off.
What'd you
do? It
was
great. Oh, what did I do? You were in town Friday? Did you get out of town Thursday?
No, I got out of town Thursday night.
Friday was an unusual weather day. It was 55 degrees Friday morning.
Really?
So I'm working outside. I'm doing stuff outside. It was almost like it was like springtime. It smelled like spring. And then around 1 o'clock, it changed. So I started a project outside at 10 in the morning when it was 55 degrees. Finished it about 1 or 2 in the afternoon and it was 25 degrees and my hands are
did
icy.
You finish it or did you just give
oh,
up?
Oh, I finished. No, right. I didn't give up. But, I mean, so Friday was interesting and then the weather got worse. What did I do? Went to a wedding Saturday. Went to I saw a basketball game at Canisius Sunday. Watched the football Sunday. Mm-hmm. Went to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Saw a basketball game there Monday night. So that's the drive back and forth. It was great. Just a great way to get away and reset. What about you? What did you do?
Well, I got out of town Thursday. Friday, I actually went to see my fifth grade teacher. I don't know
did
why
you have
I went
an assignment
to see
her.
No. Book report?
Yeah. Sorry, this is late.
She's still teaching. She's been there for a long time. Wow. Well, actually, one of my boys is the gym teacher there.
Okay.
So I was in his class, and then I'm like, let me go see Miss Smallwood. So I went over there to see her, and she's like, yeah, Donald was in fifth grade here, you know, which was a long time ago. It was back in the 90s.
You surprised her, right?
Yeah, I did surprise her, so it was good to see her. And then Saturday, I can't remember what I did. Saturday, I didn't watch much of the games on Saturday. You know, I wasn't really into those games on Saturday.
Yeah.
My son watched it a little bit. I can't remember what I did. Sunday, I watched the games really all day with my son. That's what he wanted to do. Monday, I can't remember. Why can't I remember anything I did
because
this weekend?
Because it was 5 straight days.
Yeah,
I guess it was unbelievable.
So. I got back last night. And I had this big meeting today, and so I meant to really shave last night, right? I wanted to shave my face last night. So I forgot to do it because I was doing work preparing for the meeting. I wake up this morning, and I'm like, all right, I got to shave. So for those of you who are actually watching and might watch the show on a regular basis, you can see I have no facial hair.
Yeah,
which
I just noticed
not,
that too.
It's not normal for me. What had happened was.
You screwed it up.
Screwed it up. I was shaving my mustache, and I messed up, and I'm in the mirror, and I'm like, oh, I got to shave it all off. So I had to shave it all off, and here we are.
It looks good.
Face.
Are you happy with it or no?
No,
you wish you'd
I, no. I do not look – I don't like not having hair on my face. It looks weird to me.
You look fine. You do. It's weird to be back, I got to say.
There were some things that happened over the weekend.
There were. You know when it's a good long time off work when you come back and you forgot like all the passwords into the stuff that you normally do? It's like, which password was that? I spent an hour and a half this morning trying to recapture the passwords that I forgot. And it's kind of scary that it only takes 5 days away, but that's all it took.
You know, you should just save them. You know how they say save your password?
Yeah.
You don't like doing that?
No, because that's not secure, Donald.
Well, I mean, certain things,
right,
I save them. Other things, no, it's not secure. But there are certain things that I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter if somebody gets
You're
into
right.
this thing.
You're right.
All they're going to see is me talking trash about some of the people we work with.
You and Lorenzo.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right. A lot happened, and it started on Friday morning when the news came down that the Bills parted ways with offensive coordinator Rick Dennison, and then it only took a couple of days after that when the news came out that Brian Daboll, St. Francis High School graduate, is going to be the new offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. You know, you'd be hard-pressed to say it was unexpected, but still a major upheaval, and who knows if there are more moves to fall in place. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to do anything else on this coaching staff.
You never know what this coach is going to do, what the GM is going to do. I wouldn't be shocked You know, you and I talked about this earlier. Who knows? Maybe he needs certain, or he wants certain assistants to be underneath mm-hmm. him on his offensive staff. So who knows? There might be some more changes in place or changes that are coming down the pipe here very soon, or who knows? Maybe it doesn't happen very soon. Who knows?
We'll see. We'll keep our eyes open for that. We'll talk about that with you. We want to re-engage with you. We know we've been gone for a few days. Thanks to Sal Capaccio for filling in on the show on Friday, Monday, and Tuesday. We are happy to be back. I do feel recharged, refreshed, mm-hmm. don't you, after 5 days in a row off? I haven't had that, and you haven't either, really. 5 straight days off. Well, you had a vacation at Christmas. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
No, I haven't had 5 straight days off since 2-3 weeks before training camp.
Oh, so
I mean,
that's
just
so,
to get it totally away from it was great. And I feel like it was a natural break to set us up for 2018. And the Bills cooperated by making those moves, and that's where we will start our conversation today with the new offense coordinator, Brian Daboll. And look, we realize, I think, the issues and questions that confront the Bills moving forward, including the quarterback question. By the way, that's not the only question that they face. It's the most important question they have moving forward. Tyrod Taylor, do you draft one? Do you sign one? Do you develop Nathan Peterman? All of that. There's going to be plenty of fodder for discussion in the weeks and months ahead as we approach the draft in late April and free agency in early March. All of that is coming up on the table, obviously, for discussion. But to get things started today, when it comes to Brian Daboll, the new offensive coordinator, we wanted to hear from you what his priorities should be. Find a quarterback? Sure. That's number one. Find a quarterback, develop a quarterback, figure out who you can work with at quarterback, right? That's no secret.
That's number one.
That's the number one thing for any coach. And I do think this. Let me start with this. On Friday when the news came out with Rick Dennison, I thought to myself, okay, they're going to have to find a coordinator. And the thing is, it might be difficult, at least it might be challenging, to find an offensive coordinator who would not – be sure of who his quarterback was. I mean, if you're,
you think so?
I would think so. If you're a coordinator or coordinator candidate, and there are plenty of them out there now, wouldn't your first question be when you looked at an organization, okay, who's my quarterback? Now, what if you're looking at the Buffalo Bills, you say, okay, who is our quarterback? Is it Tyrod? Is it a draft pick?
Yeah.
Is it a free agent you're going to get? What is your plan for quarterback? I would think, and we'll get a chance to talk to Brian Daboll soon, I would think that'd be question number one.
Talking to Coach McDermott and knowing Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean, they seem like pretty upfront type of guys. So I'm sure they, when they had the meeting, they probably let him know what their thoughts are on Tyrod Taylor. Right, their plan moving forward with the quarterback or anybody else in the offense, for that matter. So I would think that he probably knows. But I would think if I'm him and I'm going to leave this cushy job that I have down at Alabama, I do want to know who the quarterback is going to be. But for me as an offensive coordinator, if I get a chance to now – work with the new quarterback and build up a new quarterback, whether it's a draft pick, free agent, you know, if you bring in a different free agent and then we're going to draft one as well so that I have a chance to actually help to develop that draft pick, that goes a long way for our team, our organization, and quite frankly, my legacy as an offensive coordinator. And so I think that's something that he's probably looking forward to, is he probably knows the plan in place for if it's going to be Tyrod Taylor, if it's going to be a draft pick or free agent, but at least – if it's a new guy, it's something where he gets to develop that new guy.
Yeah. But for job security purposes?
Yeah, well, that's the one thing that's, that always looms, you know. I would think, though, that he's probably coming into here just like any free agent. You know, you're looking at it like, man, you guys just actually made it to the playoffs. So it's not something where you're coming in. I mean, Coach McDermott made it to the playoffs in his first year, so he kind of bought himself some extra. He bought himself some extra time here. So he's probably looking at it, saying, "All right, I know I'll have some time as long as I do the right things, and the offense is moving in the right direction, which is it's not hard to move in the right direction because you were almost dead last in passing. So if I can just get us a little bit better than that, we're moving in the right direction. Yeah. I'll be okay with job security, but I would love to be able to develop a quarterback. I think coaches love that, especially an offensive coordinator. They would love to be able to develop a quarterback and say, yeah, he and I have actually made this offense one of the best offenses in the league.
Yeah, I see that. And look, there's a lot to recommend the Buffalo job, stability and ownership, stability at the general manager and head coaching spots. For Brian Daboll, it's a return home back to his roots. Was born in Welland, Ontario, went to school right around the corner at St. Francis, has family here still, I mean, close immediate family. here in the Buffalo area, not too far from the stadium here. A lot to recommend the job to Brian Daboll, including, you know, his relationship with Sean McDermott. They had spent a little time together back at William & Mary. But the number one criterion is quarterback, I think. And the number one thing that my first question would be, what's our plan? Not who you got necessarily, but what's our plan? Now, so we know that. As we set up our Twitter poll today, we know that quarterback is number one. We're trying to think a little bit beyond that because there's going to be plenty of time over the weeks and months ahead to debate who the quarterback should be, to debate what the course of action should be. But we want to hear from you, other than quarterback, we know that's number one, other than quarterback, what should be the first priority for new offensive coordinator Brian Daboll? What should be his first priority other than quarterback? Let us know what you think. The lines are open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it on Twitter. You can vote on Twitter. The Twitter poll results, the early results are in. 41% of you say finding a number one wide receiver should be his first priority other than quarterback. 32% of you, about a third, say refining the offensive line scheme. More about that in a moment. 17% say finding a backup running back should be his top priority. 10% say something else. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Lines open 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Other than quarterback, what should his top priority be? Finding a number one wide receiver. Yes, we know that's the job of the offensive coordinator is not to draft talent, but certainly the offensive coordinator would have a say in who the number one receiving target should be. I think most people, and when you look at Rick Dennison's tenure, when you look at Tyrod Taylor's tenure, most Bills followers would agree, or at least maybe even assert that they really didn't have a number one target at wide receiver. They traded away Sammy. They let Robert Woods get away in free agency. That, to me, would be very high on my list of priorities if I were the new offensive coordinator. Who's going to be my target to improve the 31st passing attack in the league, right?
Definitely you have to find a number one receiver. That would be where I would go in terms of this Twitter poll. The interesting thing is people talk about refine the offensive line scheme. The biggest thing that I wonder is when Brian Daboll actually came up and did his interview, did Coach McDermott say to him, listen, we want to keep the power running scheme? Because when we went with the zone running scheme, this is where we were. Mm-hmm. And when we switched it over to power, this is where we ended up, top 10 in the league in rushing. You know, so we want to keep this. So this is what I don't know, and I have to read more about his style of offense and what he likes to do, but I would think that they would like to maintain that offensive line scheme. Now, they might want to, you know, mix and match different players or whatever the case may be, but I would think they would want to keep the same power rushing scheme because that's what got them – really to the playoffs. So aside from the defense, I think that would stay in place. You need to be able to find or have a number one wide receiver on your team. We talked about this last week. You haven't had a number one wide receiver here in the last couple of years. I mean, you had Sammy Watkins, but he wasn't because he was in and out of the lineup. He wasn't your true number one wide receiver who was available, who you could go to game in and game out. So you need to find that guy. And then you need to figure out what you're doing with the rest of the guys on your team as well at wide receiver and figure that all of that stuff out. I would go in order. I would go with a number one outside of the quarterback, number one wide receiver, figure out the rest of the wide receivers. And then you can go with, I think you need a backup running back. I do. I think the offensive line, they need some work. But in terms of the scheme needs to stay the same. Now, if we change that Twitter poll and say refine offensive line in terms of personnel, then that might be number two.
Well, all right, let's talk about that. And that is second on our list. And you're welcome to join us, too, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We all know what happened with the offensive blocking scheme, the run blocking scheme this year, right? Started out with kind of a zone blocking scheme. It wasn't working. I'm going to sneeze here, Donald, in a second.
It's going to come.
I'm all right.
It goes away?
Yeah, it does go
That's
away.
That's the worst feeling.
They couldn't really get that to work, and around midseason, maybe 6-8 games in, they slowly, and I think it was pretty gradually, incorporated elements of a power blocking scheme, right? More familiar to the Richie Incognitos and Eric Woods on that offensive line, and it worked, and they worked themselves all the way up to the sixth best rushing attack in the NFL. Yes, this group was more suited to that than the previous scheme. But I don't know if you might want to take another look at that. And keep in mind, you can change personnel. You know, there is a little bit of age on that offensive line, just
that
a little bit, something to keep an eye on. And I think it's easier to find offensive linemen who can play the zone, the wide zone blocking scheme. I think you don't have to be as athletic. You don't have to be as fast. I think you don't. You're just a different type of player. I think you can get third and fourth and fifth round picks in the draft who can come in pretty early in their career and handle the zone blocking scheme, which is probably the way they're approaching it. Like, hey, we don't need guards who can run. You know, those are dinosaurs in today's NFL,
yeah.
Right? We need more guys who can handle the scheme we want. I don't know the answer to this question, but I would not rule out the possibility that somewhere on Brian Daboll's list of things he wants to get done, it's first identify, does he want to run a zone blocking scheme? I'm not sure if he does. And number two, does he have the personnel to do that? So I would not discount that as an option in our Twitter poll or in the discussion of what his priorities might be. That's what I'm saying.
I would say if he wants to do that, then you can just add that to the list.
Add it to the list. The list is long.
If he wants to change it over to his own rushing scheme, then you don't have the personnel to get that done right now. So you need to figure out the guy. You know that you had the draft pick in Deion Dawkins, who's probably going to be your left tackle moving forward. The rest of those guys, you got to figure out. Eric Wood just signed his, extension, so he's going to be your center. But you got to figure out the guards and the right tackle position. What are you going to do there? And Richie, that, like you said, there's some age on that offensive line. So these are things that we're going to watch and pay attention to as when it comes time to let go of guys because of cap casualties, whatever the case may be, who's going to be on this offensive line moving forward. But like you said, in terms of the zone running scheme, And I'm sure we'll get Lorenzo on the show as he's staying around. He played some offensive line in his
he's our new offensive line expert.
Yeah, he's our offensive line expert. But I'm sure he can weigh in on this more on what you need to be able to run a zone type of scheme.
Yeah.
Do you need more athletic guys, less athletic guys? Can you find those guys later in the draft? You can find any player can be a draft steal or something like that, but can you find guys in the draft that are good at a zone rushing scheme later in the draft where you don't have to necessarily say, all right, we need linemen, we got to draft these guys high, because we all know that football goes in the trenches. If you don't have a good offensive line or good defensive line, you won't be good. So I think that's something that we got to pay attention to. If they want to switch it over to a zone, can you find those guys later in the draft? Or how much do you have to pay those guys? Can you bring in guys through free agency that you don't have to pay top dollar because you're not looking for a special type of player? You're looking for really any guy that can just fit in this scheme.
That's going to be interesting to find out, and I think that would be near the priority list. Finding a number one wide receiver, I think it'd be right there as well. We're talking about what's the first priority after quarterback for offensive coordinator Brian Daboll. You're welcome to join us, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And you touched on a good point, Donald, a minute ago about the wide receiver mix. Who comes back, who contributes, who are they thinking is going to be a contributor? I mean, Kelvin Benjamin, you'd have to think, has a definite role to play, but maybe not as a number one. Jordan Matthews, free agent, I don't know. I don't know that they have a role in mind for him. I would think Zay Jones is going to get back on this roster next year, and they're going to look for him, and there'll be pressure on him even after the labrum surgery other day. Pressure on him to have a much better second year than he had the first year. I think Deontay Thompson has earned a look to come back, obviously, with some of the big plays that he made. They like Brandon Riley. We know that. So there's a mix that they have to put together, I think, there at wide receiver. But none of those players that I just mentioned, I think, qualify as a legitimate number one deep threat wide receiver.
Right.
So
that's
what you got
to figure it out. You still have Andre Holmes, Brandon Tate, all of these guys that you got to figure out what you want to do with moving forward. I mean, you have a lot of draft picks. There are going to be some guys through free agency. I was just reading that guys like Demaryius Thomas might be available. You got to figure out if you want to bring in one through this. And this GM and coach have talked about they like to build their team through the draft.
Yeah.
They don't want to have to bring in a guy and pay a guy number one wide receiver money. Number one wide receiver money right now is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're trying to get into that ballpark with the number one wide receiver. They might want to just But then you're looking at it and you're like, man, can you really truly – you don't know with these draft picks what they're going to do once they get here. Will they actually be good, or will they have a bad season? And I know everybody's talking about Zay Jones. We expected Zay Jones to come in and have this great season because he caught all these passes. He didn't have the best season this year. Hopefully he comes back next year and he has a much better season. Like you said, he's going to have a lot of pressure on him. But that just goes to show that you don't know what you're going to get out of these rookies, no matter how good they looked in college, no matter how good they looked in a Senior Bowl, combine, any of that stuff, you never know how it's going to pan out, especially in their first year. That's a position that is tough to really transition to the NFL. It takes sometimes for some guys, it's a true learning curve, you know, and it might take a couple of years before they really catch on and the game slows down for them. So do you want to draft one and say he's our number one in the first round, or do you want to pay some big money to bring a number one wide receiver in?
Interesting questions for the new offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll. No, he's not here with us today, but we're going to offer up some suggestions through you. Let's hear from you. Top priority for the new OC, Brian Daboll, aside from quarterback. We know that is the number one thing to sort out. Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Good show here today as we get back at it. Phil Savage is going to join us in about 10 minutes. Who is Phil Savage? He is the executive director of the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, Alabama. Our crew is headed down there next week. Chris Brown and company will be there providing coverage of the Senior Bowl, and Phil Savage will join us at 12:30. Coming up at 1 o'clock, our buddy Trey Wingo, the co-host of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. Trey Wingo will talk about last week's games and look ahead to this weekend's championship games, and our buddy Steve Tasker coming by at 2 o'clock today. In the meantime, time for you. Give us a call. What is the top priority for offense coordinator Brian Daboll other than quarterback? 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. That's our Twitter poll. We have a couple of tweets in on this. Joe Bigelow tweets in, there is no other priority. Thanks for playing along, Joe. Okay. All right, good night. We're done. The show's over. Come on, Joe. Play along with us a little bit. Torres Carlos tweets in, if wide receiver is your number one priority after quarterback, you really need to sit down. Is he talking to you? The offense. No, you said what? The offensive line
we're
needs.
Both sitting down. I don't know.
Yeah, the offensive line needs major work. Get rid of Cordy Glenn and get a great left tackle and right guard. Only ones good are Richie and Eric.
I don't know. I mean, were you not satisfied with what? You didn't talk too much about Deion Dawkins. When he became the starter, you didn't hear much about Deion.
I think Deion Dawkins is there.
He did a good job, yeah.
I think he's your left tackle next year.
I think so. Yeah. I think they are happy with the job that he did coming in halfway. I mean, he started to sub in the early in the season, but when he was asked to actually step in and be the full-time starter, he did a good job. It wasn't like you're hearing, oh, Deion gave up another sack.
No.
Deion gave up, you know, he didn't get his guy, and it helped to maybe slow down a rushing attack or something.
Deion got better, too.
He got better, yeah, as the season went along. I think he's your left tackle. If you want to talk about the right tackle position, I'm more than – we can talk about that. You want to talk about the right guard, the other guard. We can talk about all of that stuff, but I think Deion did a good job.
Let's take a call here. Bill in Depew. Good afternoon, Bill. Welcome. You're on the show with us. Hello, Bill in Depew. Are you there, Bill? Oh, did I not do it? One more time. Okay, let's go to Steve in Rochester. Steve, hello. You're on the air with us, Steve.
Good morning, guys. Or good afternoon, guys.
How are you?
I'm just calling in to give my input on the poll. I'm thinking other because the defensive backs were the strength of the team. And with Kelvin Benjamin and hopefully Matthews coming back and Zay Jones the second year, I think receivers are set. I'm worried about a center nose tackle type run stuffer, pressure center of the pocket pass rusher, because losing Darius and potentially Kyle Williams, the middle of the defensive line could be lacking this year. And offensive line, I don't think, is a real problem with the way Dawkins played. Although whenever we needed to run the ball against someone at the end of the game to close out a game and get multiple first downs, it seemed like we could never move the ball on the ground when we absolutely needed to.
Right. I would say, Steve, that, I mean, that's a good point. There were times where you couldn't move the ball when you needed to, but I think you have to add the fact that you couldn't throw the ball really when you needed to. And that has a lot to do with the fact that you can't run the ball when you need to because teams don't trust that you can actually throw it. So they're like, we might as well just stack a bunch of people in the box and try to run against that. If you can break through that first wall against eight guys in the box, then you actually deserve to win this game. But it's hard to do that every single down, every single game, because your passing attack is not there. And that's why we're saying outside of the quarterback position that the number one wide receiver is an issue. Just think about how many big plays you watch other teams have, and you don't get those same big plays from this team. Through the passing, through the air, you don't get big plays. You don't have a number one wide receiver that you can say, man, this dude is making crazy plays out there. You just didn't have that. You had guys who, and no knock on any of these guys, but Deontay Thompson and those guys, they run those overs, those crossing routes. They're running routes that a number two or a number three or even a number four wide receiver can run. Those aren't the guys that you could say, let's just throw it up to him, he's going to make a play. 50-50 ball, I trust my guy more than I trust your guy. You didn't have any of those guys on the field. You know, even when Kelvin Benjamin was on the field, he was hurt. So you couldn't say you trusted him to be able to make those plays either.
We're talking about Brian Daboll, the new offensive coordinator, what his top priority should be after settling the quarterback spot. Give us a call. The lines are open. A couple of tweets on this. Nick Spodetti tweets in, Anthony Faso tweets in, is finding players going to be in his job description? No, but you better believe he has an idea of what he's looking for, and he will relay that to the scouting staff and the general manager and the personnel people.
As an offensive coordinator, it's not your job to find players, but when you're in a position where you might need a quarterback, it's your job to actually get on the road and go look at these guys and talk to them. These coaches will be out on the road looking for talent.
It's also the coordinator's job to let the personnel people know, hey, I really need this type of receiver. I really need this kind of tight end. I hope we can get this kind of quarterback. I really think we need a backup running back. They're not silos here. Everybody, you know, you find players and I'll coach them. No.
They work together.
Yeah. So that's why we're throwing that in as far as his top priority. Obviously, he's not going to be out on the run. I mean, the scouts have done the bulk of their work already, by the way.
The scouts have done definitely the bulk of their work. But the coordinators and the head coach, those guys, when you're talking about drafting, especially quarterbacks, and I know we're talking about outside of quarterbacks, but that might be in what they're trying to – it probably is something that they're looking at, the quarterback position. The coordinator, the offensive coordinator, wants to be able to talk to these guys. Can I work with this kid?
Yeah.
What's he like as a person? You know, it's not that I'm going out here to actually watch a game, watch him play or something like that, even though they might be down at the Senior Bowl. And there's some good talent this year in the Senior Bowl, which is a lot different than last year, at least some big names. It's not that I'm out there trying to look at them play. I'm trying to talk to them as people. I want to know about you, your family. I want to know about you off the field. What's your goals in life? These are the things that they're trying to get a read on. You know, they're trying to read the person and not just the athlete, and that's why the coordinators will go out, especially with the quarterback position. When you're drafting guys in the first round, especially the quarterback, you have to know everything about them.
Want to know from you, top priority after quarterback for Bill's new offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll. What should he be interested in other than finding the next quarterback? Speaking of the Senior Bowl, we're going to talk about the Senior Bowl next. Phil Savage is going to join us. He is executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. That is next week down in Mobile, Alabama. Our man Chris Brown is going to be down there covering for us. We'll get his reports next week. We'll get a preview from Phil Savage coming up next. And Phil Savage is also the radio color analyst on the Alabama Football Radio Network. So he'll have some thoughts on Brian Daboll, we anticipate. That's coming up next right here on the show, The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of The John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones live from our One Buffalo studio here with the John Murphy Show. Next week, the Senior Bowl, the Reese's Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. The game itself on Saturday, January 27th. Of course, it's the practices that lead into it that are the big story for NFL folks. Our man Chris Brown is getting set to head down there to cover it for us next week. And joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline for a preview right now is a man who is the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, also the radio analyst for Alabama Crimson Tide, their radio network. Happy to have Phil Savage on the line with us. Phil, John Murphy, and Donald up here in Buffalo, thanks very much for joining us. We got our best man on the case next week, Chris Brown, coming down to cover the Senior Bowl for us.
Yeah, well, good afternoon, guys. It'll be great to have him. And I tell you, he's got some Buffalo weather right now, but by the time he arrives, we should be around 60 degrees, so he'll enjoy it.
Man, Phil, I'm not sure. When I played in the Senior Bowl down there, it was cold. It was cold. I wasn't expecting it. When I got down there, I'm like, is this Alabama, or are we in the Northeast somewhere?
Yeah, you know, the weather here is hit or miss this time of year. We've been very fortunate over the last number of game days, and knock on wood, we're hoping for the same next week. But the temperature should be fine. We're going to try to dodge some rain on, sounds like, maybe Tuesday and Wednesday during the practices.
Hey, Phil, we want to ask you a lot about the Senior Bowl next week and some of the prospects there, but I want to start, too, with your Alabama ties, your Alabama football ties. You are the color analyst on the Crimson Tide Radio Network, so you have seen, at least for the last year, seen a lot of Bill's new offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll. What can you tell us about him and his style of offense? What kind of coordinator do you think the Bills are getting here?
Well, I think Brian, first of all, comes from a background where you cater and play to your strengths. And when he got to Tuscaloosa last year, of course, there's an adjustment. You go from the NFL now to college players, a 20-hour rule in place, running quarterback returning in Jalen Hurts. And so, you know, they really built their offense around a quartet of running backs that they had, plus the dual threat nature of Jalen Hurts. And then Calvin Ridley was their best receiver. He declared for the draft just the other day he'll be a first-round pick. And so all told, I thought Brian did a nice job. I saw him at one of the media day events in advance of the Clemson game, and I told him to the side that I thought he had really done a good job with what he inherited at Alabama, and knowing that, look, there's some guardrails in place when you coach offensive football for Nick Saban. And I thought he managed through that well. And then, of course, at the end, the most dramatic twist of the season was the insertion of Tua Tagovailoa, the true freshman quarterback. He comes in the second half and saves the day for Alabama as they come from behind to beat Georgia in the national championship.
When you say guardrails, what are you talking about? Handcuffs or restrictions on what you can do? Is that the way you see it, Phil?
I would just say that, look, Bama's defense for the last 10 years has been ranked in the top five against the run and in scoring, you know, in points allowed. And so their philosophy is to end every drive with a kick, an extra point, a field goal, or a punt. And so punting is not a bad word in Tuscaloosa. And at times, I think there are situations where you probably play it a little bit closer to the vest, a little bit more conservative. But, you know, I would say this, that, look, you know, Brian was at the Patriots. They had the greatest quarterback of all time probably, and Tom Brady, who was a pocket passer. He's not a runner at all. And Brian gets to Tuscaloosa last spring, and Jalen Hurts is a tremendous dual-threat quarterback. He's 220 pounds. He's built like a running back, and, you know, he actually had more carries than anybody this year when it was all said and done. So it was just it's a different game. It's the same sport, but a different game. And I thought he adjusted to it quite well, considering the fact also that he was following Lane Kiffin, mm-hmm. who sometimes let that car get outside of the guardrails.
hey, Phil, so Brian now is coming to Buffalo. Like you said, he came from the Patriots, where you have a traditional pocket-passing quarterback. Then he goes down to Tuscaloosa, where he has all dual-threat type of quarterbacks. They run more of a power type of game down there. Their philosophy is, like you said, basically don't turn the ball over. We want to end it with a kick, regardless if that's a score or a punt. Coming up here to Buffalo right now, they have a decision to make on Tyrod Taylor. So you being down there and possibly knowing him a little bit, do you think he will want to keep Tyrod Taylor here, or would he want to have the traditional pocket passing type of quarterback?
I would say, just as a general comment and it's 100% speculation, because I've never had a conversation with Brian Daboll in regards to his philosophy on quarterbacks, but just based upon his experience with the Patriots and then based upon the fact that Bama's offense took off in the second half with a passer that could sequence through reads and Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, this kid is special, guys. He's got an instinctive flair about it. He showed it throughout the year. And, you know, you could see the difference in the way the offense ran with Tua versus obviously the first half with Jalen. But I would think that he will lean more towards, you know, a pure passer and a guy with quick eyes and a quick arm. Now, is that Tyrod Taylor? I don't know. Is that someone else on the roster, Nathan Peterman? I don't know the answer to that. But I would suspect that with them changing offensive coordinators, they're probably going to put everything on the table and try to come up with the best decision in regards to what direction they really want to go. Now, Sean McDermott spent time at Carolina. They had Cam Newton. He's the ultimate dual threat quarterback. I mean, no one brings a more significant package of physical talent to the field than Cam Newton. So I could see it really going both ways. It's not a great answer, but I think that kind of the overall landscape for what you guys are looking at this spring.
We're with Phil Savage. He is not only the radio color analyst on the Alabama Football Network, but also the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl next week in Mobile, Alabama. Let's talk about that for a second, Phil. You've got really a great group of quarterbacks there. Baker Mayfield's coming, Mason Rudolph, Josh Allen, Luke Falk, and several others. That's as healthy and robust a group of quarterbacks as I can remember at the Senior Bowl in recent years.
Yeah, we decided to bring 8 quarterbacks because we thought there was really good depth to the class this year. I know that Sam Darnold at USC and Josh Rosen from UCLA, the 2 underclassmen, have gotten most of the attention this year. But when you went beyond just the very top of the draft, I thought there were some very interesting prospects, you know, like a Mike White from Western Kentucky or Kyle Laletta from Richmond are a couple names that will be here. But we were obviously very excited about getting Baker Mayfield, the Heisman Trophy winner here. He committed to us before Christmas, and then Josh Allen came on board about a week or so ago. And I think there's a real chance that Josh can use our event to really catapult himself maybe to the top of the draft, and that would obviously be, you know, a real feather in our cap if that could happen, much like it did with Carson Wentz, who ended up going number 2 overall a couple of years ago.
Now, when you talk about, especially at Baker Mayfield, a guy who actually won the Heisman, a guy who played in some big-time games and played very well against a strong Georgia defense, I don't know if you've had a chance to speak to him when he actually committed to playing in the Senior Bowl, but do you feel like he's playing in it because he has a chip on his shoulder? He doesn't feel like people believe in him yet?
I think for Baker, much of his resume has been built on the competitive nature that he has toward the game of football. I mean, he's a 2-time walk-on at both Texas Tech and OU. He's really defied the odds to get to the place where he is right now. And I think to sort of complete the narrative of him, I think it would have been very odd for him to pass up the Senior Bowl. And so, you know, there was really no question in his mind about coming down here. He did have a couple of questions about how many quarterbacks would be here, which team he would be on, those sorts of things. But he told me on December the 22nd, hey, if I don't get hurt in the playoffs or the national championship game, I'm planning on being there. So I think he's very committed to just continuing to showcase not only his skill, but also just the temperament and the mentality that he brings to the table.
Hey, Phil, I'm intrigued by Josh Allen from Wyoming, not just because of his size, his measurables, but you know, a guy coming off a not a great senior campaign out there at Wyoming, it seemed to me he could really benefit from a solid week next week in Mobile, huh?
Yeah, John, I saw Josh at the Manning Academy last summer down in Thibodaux, Louisiana in June. Mm-hmm. And what happens, they bring about 35 to 40 college quarterbacks in to serve as counselors. But then they have their own workouts because obviously they're trying to get ready for their own season. And so I've gone over there now 5 years in a row as a guest of Archie Manning, and you're just standing there and you're watching these guys go through the paces, and they don't have jerseys or nameplates, so you don't know who is who. And just standing there within about 10 minutes, I'm like, who's that big dude? Because that's Josh Allen from Wyoming. I mean, this guy's got an absolute rocket of an arm, and his stats are not going to impress people on paper. But if you watch the first half of his bowl game against Central Michigan, in that game, in weather circumstance, the arm talent, the mobility, the accuracy, I mean, he displayed all of it. And he just wasn't able to do it consistently this year. He lost several players around him. But I really do agree with you that this could be a huge stepping stone for him because I think it's an opportunity for him to stand alone, so to speak, away from Darnold and away from Rosen, and use this as a platform to get a head start on what people think about this quarterback class, especially from a coaching standpoint. The scouts may already have their minds made up, but the coaches are just getting involved now in the draft evaluation. So I think that's where he can really make some progress.
Phil, I have one more quarterback question. I want to get into another position, but this name, Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State, is a name that I've received tweets about from the fans here in Western New York as a guy who might still be there when the Bills pick later in the first round. What can you tell us a little bit about Mason Rudolph?
Yeah, Mason, of course, was very prolific at Oklahoma State. He's got the classic size. He is definitely a pocket passer. He's someone that will have a bit of an advantage here next week because he has two of his receivers that are coming with him, Marcel Aitman and then the All-American James Washington. So that could give him a bit of a leg up on the competition here, but Mason's got a strong arm. I would say that he's accurate overall with the football. And most people that I've spoken to in the league have him pegged on the high side as a late first rounder, on the low side somewhere in the second round. So, you know, I think you're probably in the right ballpark in terms of where his value is going to end up setting.
Hey, Phil, I'm curious about defensive tackle, defensive ends that you have there. Who do you think will be the best NFL prospects, and who do you think will be the guys who might be able to step in and play right away as rookies?
Yeah, in terms of some of the defensive line talent, from an interior standpoint, I would say Harrison Phillips from Stanford is going to be really an interesting prospect for people to watch. We've got a couple of the North Carolina State players here, B.J. Hill and Justin Jones. Those are inside-type players. On the outside, as far as pass rushers, keep an eye on this name, Marcus Davenport. He's from UT San Antonio, the Roadrunners. And I've had multiple people call once he accepted his invite and say, wow, you definitely have a first-rounder. You might have a top 15 choice there in Davenport. He is not well-known across the country, but the NFL scouts, of course, know him extremely well. Harold Landry from Boston College is committed to the game. Now, he had a huge junior year. This year was not able to post the same kinds of numbers, so I think he wants to kind of reestablish himself as a top-shelf pass rusher. And then Obo Okoronkwo from Oklahoma is another outside rusher that, honestly, when Bama was in the playoff and we were sort of getting ready for perhaps Oklahoma or Georgia, when I watched the tapes, I thought he was the one Oklahoma defender that really stood out with his effort and his hustle and his ability to come off the edge.
Hey, Phil, being that I play receiver, I want to get us back to the sexiest position in the game, which is wide receiver.
Doesn't stop.
It never stops. What receivers can you tell us about that might be, as we're talking about the Bills might need a number one wide receiver, what guys are in the game that might actually step above the rest of the competition and even the juniors that are coming out this year?
Yeah, you know, in our game, the 12 wideouts that we have committed, I would say coming into the game, James Washington probably has the most impressive resume. Now, he's built like a running back. You know, he's not the 6'3", 220-pound power forward that people typically think of when you're talking about a number one receiver. But we've got several bigger type receivers that are on the outside, like Jaleel Scott from New Mexico State. You know, he helped them get to a bowl game for the first time in like 50 years. But he's one of those bigger outside red zone type of receivers. You know, another name to keep an eye on from a talent standpoint is Darren Carrington. Now, he started off at Oregon, ran into some issues there, transferred to Utah, and put together a very good year at Utah. So if he can clean up some of his off-the-field concerns, he's another player that could emerge over the course of time. It's interesting, Donald, you know, with all the juniors that come out, we typically, you know, our receiving core typically is usually a second or third tier type of group because the top ones leave early. And you referenced that a moment ago, and, of course, Calvin Ridley from Alabama, likely to be the first receiver off the board. Calvin is an extremely talented player. He's not as big as Julio. He's probably not quite as flashy or as fluid as Amari Cooper, two previous Alabama receivers. But I do think that he's clearly a first-rounder. How high he goes, I think, remains to be seen in terms of what some of the other talent at the same position that's going to be out there.
Phil Savage from the Senior Bowl. The game itself is a week from this Saturday, January 27th, 2:30 p.m. here in Buffalo on the NFL Network. And NFL Network will have coverage of the workouts, the practices all week, I would assume, Phil. Is that right?
Yep, NFL Network will have wall-to-wall coverage for practices and the game. Then ESPN will cover the practices on Wednesday and Thursday. So, you know, those guys will be all over the field with their cameras and their mic'd up microphones with the coaches. So it should be, an interesting watch for the fans up there in your part of the country.
It always is. Phil, thanks for this. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week next week.
Okay, guys, I appreciate the time. And Donald, come back and see us sometime as an alum.
I'll have to do that.
Yeah, we have a nice reception for you guys on Wednesday night, past players reception.
You should go.
So next time you're down, you'll get that invite.
There's a Senior Bowl Hall of Fame, too, isn't there, Phil?
I'm not in that one.
There is a Senior Bowl Hall of Fame.
Not in that one, but I'll come down as an alum.
Thanks, Phil.
You guys be good. Thank you.
Okay, Phil Savage is the man, the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, color analyst on the Alabama Football Radio Network. It's a good lineup down there. How was your Senior Bowl experience? Did you enjoy it? Did you like it?
I did. I had a lot of fun. It was good to be on. Coming from FCS, it was good to be on that top level with a bunch of guys like an Antonio Brown who was on my team.
Did you feel like you made a good impression? Did you play well, practice well?
I did all right.
Okay.
Yeah, I did a lot better in the Texas Nation game and then at the Combine.
Well, how many years ago was this now? 7 or 8 years?
2010.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. All right, thanks again to Phil Savage. He joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Back with more in a moment. Brian Daboll, what's his second priority after quarterback? Let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We're back. That's right. John Murphy, Donald Jones, back in our familiar perch, One Bills Drive, the One Buffalo studio. Happy to have you with us. Phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Let us know what you think about Brian Daboll and what his priority should be. You know, talking to Phil Savage a minute ago, we asked him, you know, what kind of coordinator are we getting. The one thing that stuck with me, Donald, was how Phil Savage described, I think, and to paraphrase, he talked about how adaptable he is to the talent he has, which you have to be. But it sounds like after just 1 year of exposure down there at Alabama, it sounds like that might be the defining characteristic of Brian Daboll. It's not the type of guy who's a system guy. I'm going to come here and, boom, put this system on you. It's like, who do we got? Who are we working with?
I mean, you have to be like that in this day and age in sports, but especially in football, because you have so many different things changing. You have the college level, which you don't have as much. You have the talent, but guys need to learn how to play in the league and in a different system. So you have to be able to adapt to be able to be good. You have to be able to, all right, we got this kid playing at running back. How can we use him the best way? Because he wasn't doing this in college. Or we have this quarterback, like a Tyrod Taylor. How do we create a type of scheme that will work around what he's good at doing? We don't have the best wide receiver, so how can we create a scheme to be able to still have a decent passing game without having a number one wide receiver on the team? So it's good that you're that way, but I think it's also good for him coming in with so much draft capital. With I believe they're going to make moves, cap casualty, so they'll have a little bit more room to be able to do things. I think he's coming into a decent situation here.
I loved when Phil Savage described it as, what, guardrails around
the Alabama
offense, which basically means don't turn it over, basically is what he's saying. That's got to be the message from Saban, do not turn it over.
And that's what it was here, don't turn it over. And especially when you have a head coach who's a defensive-minded coach, they know they want to get turnovers. They know if we can create turnovers, that changes the game. So just don't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
And Sean McDermott, Coach McDermott here, is a coach. He is the true CEO of the organization. He is the guy who just oversees everything. He allows those coordinators. It's always interesting to me, and I'm sure they're actually running some things that on the defensive side that Coach McDermott likes to run. But it's always interesting that Coach McDermott gets all of the praise and Leslie Frazier gets none of it. And they're like,
right.
Oh, yeah, it's Coach McDermott's defense. And I'm like, well, Leslie Frazier actually calls the plays on defense.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's not just Sean McDermott. He's the one that oversees everything. So on the offensive side, I think he is going to say the same things. Just don't turn the ball over. We don't need to give the game to another team until you find that guy that you trust, the quarterback that you trust to make certain throws and he can run everything, we're probably going to run the offense this way so that we're not having those turnovers and we're not giving the game away.
Yeah, and as always, you hope that this group, this coaching staff, this coordinator is here for a good long time, right, to have success.
Yeah, yeah.
And because so that he can maybe grow with the quarterback.
That's the biggest thing. I would think at this point that they're going to be here for some time. But, yeah, you need those guys to be in place because even with these quarterbacks, you never know. The Jaguars drafted Blake Bortles, 5 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, he's the franchise quarterback. This guy's 6'5", 6'6", prototype pocket passer. He still hasn't come along. Now, right. This year he had a little bit better of a year, and it has a little bit helped that team get into the playoffs and where they are this week playing against the Patriots. But it takes time for these guys to start to come around. Some guys will just hit on the first year. But for the most part, these quarterbacks take a little time to come around. And that's any position in this league, but especially the quarterback position.
All right, we're going to break for the top of the hour. When we come back, more discussion about the Bills and the rest of the NFL. We'll continue this discussion with you also, what Ryan Dable's priority should be as the new offensive coordinator of the Bills. Trey Wingo standing by to join us next, the host of NFL Live on ESPN, co-host of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. Trey Wingo, when we return, the John Murphy Show, coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where the offseason is underway here at One Bills Drive. Coaching staff quiet, players gone. Eric Wood might hear his phone ring in the next day or two. He was a first alternate for this year's Pro Bowl, meaning if a starter for the Pro Bowl bows out due to injury, Eric Wood could play. Eric told SiriusXM NFL Radio he has already been put on standby because of Marquise Pouncey, questionable from the Steelers heading into last week's playoff game with a hip injury. Bills corner Tre'Davious White has been named to the all-rookie defense by the Pro Football Writers of America. White, with a sensational year, led all rookies with 18 passes defended this year, one of only two NFL players with 18 passes defended, four interceptions, and two fumble recoveries. Trey White, in his rookie year, was the defensive rookie in the month in September and the Pro Football Focus Rookie of the Year, and now he is an all-rookie defender, as named by the Pro Football Writers. Jaguars rookie running back Leonard Fournette was not injured when he was involved in a minor car crash yesterday. According to the Florida Highway Patrol, Fournette was rear-ended during a three-car chain reaction crash. He was not at fault in the crash after he drove home, and he drove home after the incident. NFL news coming today from Pittsburgh, where the Pittsburgh Steelers have parted ways with Todd Haley, their longtime offensive coordinator. Todd Haley has been let go. He will not return as offensive coordinator for the Steelers. It is technically not a firing, as Haley's contract expired after the season. Ian Rappaport says quarterbacks coach Randy Fichtner is considered the favorite to replace Todd Haley. Steelers assistant Mike Munchak declined a second interview with the Arizona Cardinals, turned it down, according to Chris Mortensen. Munchak has been Pittsburgh's offensive line coach since 2014. And hockey. Buffalo Sabres back from the bye week on the practice ice today. The Sabres play at the New York Rangers tomorrow night, 7:30, a nationally televised game coming up tomorrow night. And that is the update, excuse me, from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio. We are back in the saddle, and joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, back with us, the host of ESPN's NFL Live, co-host of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. Happy to have Trey Wingo on the line with us. Trey, John Murphy and Donald here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us here today.
How's the weather in Buffalo, guys? It's pretty miserable here.
Well, it's miserable here as well, Trey. I mean, I'm known as the guy who complains about the
yes,
weather.
Yes, you are. So he's your weather guy,
just,
Trey.
I'm just going to let you know. It's pretty bad.
So I asked the right guys.
Oh, yeah. Roll with it. I don't whine about it like some people do. You know, I just roll with it.
Murph grew up here. He's kind of used to it. I'm from Jersey, but it's not quite the same. You know, I mean, I woke up this morning. I had to get to the other side of Buffalo. It took me like an hour. Traffic was horrible.
Well, just don't speed through that one part of town because people know you're trying to leave.
Yeah. That's right. I forgot about that. Hey, Trey, what's I know there's a ton of NFL news these days. Coaching moves all over. But your reaction and maybe what the typical reaction is to Brian Dable coming home to be the Bills' new offensive coordinator. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, he is definitely he's been an NFL guy basically his entire career. So his stint in Alabama was
somewhat out of the norm for what we'd expected of him. But I think that he's going to fit really well with what Sean McDermott wants to do. And, you know, obviously Alabama was very run-centric, and I think the Bills are built run-centric. But if they're going to get better, they've got to get more plays, as we know, out of the passing game, where you guys were last in the receptions, yards, and touchdowns from wide receivers. So his strength is the Bills' strength, but we got to make sure that passing game gets up to muster now.
You know, we were debating here, and Donald and I have been off for a couple of days, how much of an issue that was for Brian Daboll. Like, maybe the first or second question he asks when he interviews for the Buffalo job, who's going to be your quarterback? Where are we going at quarterback? Wouldn't you think that would be the case?
I would absolutely think that would be the case. And I guess one of the next questions would be, how much input as the offensive coordinator am I going to have when you're making that decision?
Right.
Because you want to make sure that your OC believes that he has players that can run the things he wants to run. And that's now obviously a big part of what the head coach and the general manager are going to be doing.
Now, the interesting thing is, you know, we just talked to Phil Savage from the Senior Bowl, and he was saying one of the biggest things about Brian Daboll is his ability to adapt. And automatically I thought about, okay, well, you had mobile quarterbacks down at Alabama. I wonder if coming here, if he would say, you know what, I can work with Tyrod Taylor if that's the route that you want to go.
I think he absolutely could. There's no question about that. And, you know, we saw what he did not only with Jalen Hurts, but how also with Tua when he got in there, Tagovailoa, what he was able to do with him. Because, you know, look, he has a better arm, there's no question. But he can also move a little bit. And it was that one scramble to me in the national championship game that sort of turned the tide when Tua, for lack of a better term, we're talking
unintended.
About
yeah, tide.
Didn't even mean to do that, but you know, he rolled right on 3rd and 7 and looked like he was going to get hit and tackled for a loss. And three Georgia defenders bounced off each other. He managed to run around the left end, pick up about 15 yards, and later on that drive, he put it in the end zone. So that's certainly part of what he was witnessing and could deal with in Buffalo. And in Alabama, and I'm sure he could deal with it in Buffalo as well.
With Trey Wingo, the host of NFL Live on ESPN. And before we talk about some of the games, Trey, we are in the coach season, the coach switching season. It seems like most things are settled now, except maybe for the Arizona Cardinals. What do you think?
Yeah, we were talking about that this morning on our show. I mean, there seems to be a name attached to every opening except Arizona. Pat Shurmur was rumored maybe to be going there, but it looks like he's going to be settling in on the Giants whenever the Vikings situation is done. And, you know, the Arizona thing is interesting because there's some weapons there, but they have a big issue at quarterback. Carson Palmer has retired, you know, and they've got to find out who that's going to be. The Giants, I believe, they'll use that second pick, overall pick, on the next guy to replace Eli Manning. I think Eli's going to be there next year and probably play pretty well. So I think that in the Giants situation, they're going to get that quarterback that they want to be ready maybe for the 2019 season. Or maybe even if they think they can get 2 more years out of Eli, who knows? But the Arizona quarterback situation makes it a little more trepidatious for people to be diving into that coaching position.
Hey, Trey, speaking of coaches, now the Pittsburgh Steelers were a team that everybody thought it was destined that they would end up in the AFC Championship game against the Patriots, and they were probably the only team that could actually beat the Patriots. We all know they're not there as they lost to the Jaguars. Coming out of that game, and you just heard Murph do the update and talk about Todd Haley actually stepping away, but there have been reports that some people internally would like for them to move in a different direction with the head coach. What do you think about that?
Well, here's what I know about that, okay? The Steelers don't make head coaching picks.
Right.
I mean, they don't. Since 1969, we've had more Popes, 4, than head coaches of Pittsburgh, 3, okay? It's since 1969, it's been Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Mike Tomlin. So there are some people who are part of the ownership but have no voting say. One of the Rooney family members got some interest in gaming, so he had to sell off his shares, and these guys picked up their shares. But they're non-voting shares. They don't have any say. They do have a pipeline to Art Rooney, but they don't have a say in what Art Rooney does or any of the Steelers organization does. And they are upset, and understandably so on some level, I believe, about some things that played out maybe not only in the AFC Championship game, but this was kind of a disjointed season in terms of getting everybody on the same page for Pittsburgh. Remember the issue with Alejandro Villanueva, who came out when they all thought they were going to be in the locker room, and then there were some there's some outbursts on the sidelines. And, you know, I don't think the Steelers as an organization or coaching staff handled the controversial loss to the Patriots very well. I don't think they handled the end of the game against the Jaguars very well. You know, you're only down a score, you have two timeouts, and you're on the plus side of the two-minute warning. Why onside kick it? Send it deep, get a three and out, and then you can potentially tie the game. Well, they tried the onside kick. That didn't work. And then they didn't use one of their timeouts before the two-minute warning, which led to another 12 or 13 seconds to bleed off the clock when you needed two scores. So there were a lot of situational things that did not play out well for the Steelers, and a lot of that's on the head coach. But at the end of the day, they're not making a head coaching change. Mike Tomlin is still a very, very good coach. Someone was going to have to go, and it looked like, look, there's always been issues with Todd Haley in Pittsburgh. But the bottom line is that offense produced. I mean, they were third in the league in scoring, and they did put up 42 points on the Jacksonville Jaguars. So it seems weird that he would be the one to go, which makes you think there might have been some other issues with Haley with the rest of that team. And that sort of MO has followed Todd wherever he's been. Are there questions about whether or not the Steelers have underachieved with Mike Tomlin over the last few years? Yeah, that's a fair question to ask, but I don't think he's going anywhere.
And one more coaching situation to ask you about, Trey, before we move on to the games, and that's Tennessee. Do you have any insight into what went down there with Mularkey, and is Vrabel really in line to be the guy there?
Well, his name has certainly come up, and I think they're very interested in him. And I think what went down is they won one more game than they thought they were going to win. I mean, in the wild card game, we were starting to hear reports, and Adam Schefter was reporting that win or lose, this might be Mike Mularkey's last game. And then, of course, they pull off one of the four greatest comebacks in postseason history. It's only happened four times where you've had a 18-point or larger deficit at the half and come back to win a playoff game. So you can't really go, wow, unbelievable, great job, and you're fired. So they released that statement and say, we are going forward with Mike Mularkey. We just didn't know they were going forward for a week. And then as soon as they got fired, as soon as they lost, they were like, yeah, okay, that was fun, but we had the lead, and they rolled off 35 unanswered points, so I think we're going to go in another direction.
Crazy. Trey Wingo is our guest. He's co-host of Golic and Wingo, weekday 6 a.m. on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. I was watching your show yesterday, Trey, and I got a big kick out of your segment with Pete Bursich, the color man on the Vikings radio network. I'm glad you did what you did. I want folks to listen to the call, the famous call now of the big touchdown play that won them their divisional playoff round game. And I'm glad you got after him the way you did, but let's play it for people. This is the Minnesota Vikings radio network Sunday in their huge victory over New Orleans. The game-winning play with Paul Allen on the play-by-play and Pete Bursich, the color man.
Case on a deep drop, steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side, caught by Diggs.
Stay
in
the
ball! Oh, my God!
At the 30!
No
way!
Touchdown!
Are you kidding me?
What a miracle finish!
It's a Minneapolis miracle!
No way!
Stephon Diggs and the Minnesota Vikings have walked off on the New Orleans Saints. It's a 61-yard Minneapolis miracle! I can't believe what I just saw, Paul Allen. What an unbelievable play.
Trey, on behalf of NFL play-by-play guys all over the league, thank you for talking to him a little bit about stepping on his guy there. That broke my heart when I heard that. That was terrible.
I knew you would feel that way, and I had to ask him. I said, this was, you know, do you believe in miracles? Yes. Or Jack Buck, I don't believe what I just saw.
Right.
Or
right.
We'll see you tomorrow night with a game, extra inning, game-winning home run. And he just had a mouth salad that just flew out of his mouth, complete diarrhea of the language, and just blah, blah, blah. And I said to him, I said, Pete, did you ever go up to your buddy Paul and say, hey, man, sorry I ruined that moment for you?
It was.
And he said, no, we talked, and Paul's great about it, but I'm sure at some point Paul would have been, dude, you just killed me.
Yeah, right?
He did. He stepped all over him.
You know, the crazy thing is, as he started to step all over him, eventually they kind of came together and was like, yeah,
right.
Together.
Yeah, Paul Allen probably just gave up and said, okay, I'll just bellow too. I'll just, whatever, that's all we're looking for
crazy.
Here.
Yeah. But you love those moments because it's just the sheer raw emotion coming out of everybody. And you know this, if you're a local radio guy, you're part of the fabric of the team. You're the voice that people listen to. And you become, you know, There's a reason people are called homers, you know, because you want to root for their success. I get it. It's wonderful. So that part of it was great. But we had to call him to task a little bit and say, dude, let the guy do his job without screaming at the top of your lungs.
Please.
And it was so emotional because it was so unexpected. Really, maybe the most memorable, one of the most memorable plays in the NFL in the last couple of decades, I would think, Trey, huh?
Oh, Mike. Well, it's the first ever walk-off touchdown we've had in terms of no time left on the clock. That was the first time in NFL history that we've had a touchdown scored in the fourth quarter with no time left on the clock to win the game. So, you know, yeah, we'd literally never seen it before. And it was amazing. And, you know, we're going to have Drew Brees on the show when we're down at the Super Bowl. And I'm going to ask him at some point, as much as it pains you to that play and your career, did, at some part, as an offensive player and a quarterback, did you have to say, damn, that was pretty cool if they were to pull that off? You know, like, what did they get him to say? Yeah, it stunk for us, but God, that was really cool that they were able to do that with no time left on the clock.
I just feel horrible for the safety there because, yeah. I mean, everybody in that position, if you know football, your rules are don't let anybody get behind you. And if he catches the ball, matter of fact, you can let him catch the ball, but tackle.
Right.
Just hold him until everybody else comes. He didn't do either one of those. So I know he felt so bad after that game.
Well, look, and he's been a big reason why that defense turned around. I mean, the top of the Saints draft this year, their first four picks, were off the charts good. Ryan Ramczyk started and played every snap. Lattimore is going to the Pro Bowl. I think he was one of near the league leaders with interceptions. Alvin Kamara, obviously a home run with everything he can do. And Marcus Williams. Those were their four picks. And Marcus Williams started 15 games. He missed one game, and he started every other one. But you're right. As you know, as a DB, I mean, he's running to make the hit. And I've watched it 100 times. And he was just said he got there early. He was afraid he was going to get PI. Well, just stop. Let him catch it. The catch doesn't ruin you. You know, you can make the catch. Let him make the catch as long as you keep him in bounds. And just, as you said, hang on to him. So, I mean, to me, instead of running up there and, like, going low and sort of diving for the big hit, all he had to do was sort of put on the brakes, let him make the catch, and then just get him to the ground. I mean, you could stand right next to him there because he had to sort of loop and get the ball. Just get him to the ground. So it was really missing of the Raymond play a couple of years ago in the divisional round when Joe Flacco hit Jacoby Jones for an 80-yard or 70-yard touchdown bomb to tie the game with the Broncos. And they eventually won it in overtime and would go on to win Super Bowl 47.
And Trey Wingo is our guest from ESPN. And, of course, that takes Minnesota and takes us to the NFC Championship game. You got Minnesota coming off this emotional high, and you've got the Eagles going in with an incredible chip on their shoulder or dog bone on their shoulder. What do you make of this game coming up on Sunday? And you know, these are not the – I mean, a month ago, no one really would have picked this as the NFC Championship game, would they? Or 3 weeks ago anyway.
Can you imagine the prop bet you could have made in Vegas if you laid down a sizable amount of cash and said, yeah, I'm going to say Nick Foles and Case Keenum are going to be the starting quarterbacks in the NFC Championship game? The Eagles are playing this thing as they should as underdogs. They're the only number one seed ever that's going to be an underdog in two straight games at home in the postseason. But, you know, the thing about Case Keenum is that people are looking at him and thinking about what he's been in the past, as opposed to what he is right now. Because if you put his stats up there, you wouldn't say that's a game manager. You wouldn't say that's a backup or even a third-string quarterback. I mean, he completed 68% of his throws, and in 14 starts, he had 22 touchdowns against 7 interceptions. Well, the guy he just beat, or you know, the team that they just beat in the Saints, is being quarterbacked by Drew Brees. In 16 starts, Drew Brees had 23 touchdown passes and 8 interceptions. So essentially, Case Keenum and Drew Brees had the same year in terms of production. And I think that people are thinking about what Case was before 2017 as opposed to what he is in 2017. He has played like an elite quarterback in 2017, and he's a big reason. They're not there in spite of him. They're there because of him on many levels.
You know, Trey, you're talking about Case Keenum and Nick Foles, the quarterbacks, and you flip it over to the other game. You got Blake Bortles versus arguably the best quarterback of all time in Tom Brady. The question is, first of all, does Blake Bortles have a Blake Bortles game, or does he actually play a very good game? But even if he doesn't, is that defense good enough to shut down the Patriots and actually go on to the Super Bowl?
Well, I think the defense is, and I'll tell you why, because they have the two things that can really frustrate Patriots receivers, and that's two physical press corners that can play that way if they want to. What did we see in the Miami loss on Monday night that New England had late in the year? Mm-hmm. Those two corners for Miami got up on the line and jammed Cooks, jammed Hogan, and made sure they didn't have a free release. And the thing about the Patriots is, you know, none of those guys, even Cooks, you know, he has top-end speed, but he's not super quick off the line. So what you want to do is jam those guys off the top and stick to them. Now, obviously, Gronk was not in that game, and that's a huge difference as opposed to what's going to happen on Sunday. But they have guys, I believe, that as linebackers can match up with Gronk maybe better athletically than anybody in Telvin Smith and Miles Jack. They have the defense, even though Pittsburgh got them for 42 points, they have the defense that can give New England trouble. What then, as you said, Donald, the question becomes, what are we getting out of Blake Bortles? Does he play like he did against Buffalo, where it was amazing that they somehow won that game, the Jaguars? Or does he play like he did against Pittsburgh? And he wasn't brilliant against Pittsburgh, but he wasn't putrid either.
Right.
All he has to do is keep some drives alive with his legs, maybe make two or three big throws down the field, and that defense will keep you in the game. And he was able to do that against the Steelers, and he hit that one big one down the middle that set up the third, I think, of Leonard Fournette's three touchdowns that really put them, I thought, in good, up 14 points late in the game for good. He made those throws. Can he make those throws and not make the big mistakes? If he does that, Jacksonville has a real chance in this game.
I got to tell you, though, Trey, I'm a proud father of two Buffalo Bills loving, Patriots hating boys, and my oldest son said to me the other day, the problem with this is, which of these quarterbacks, Bortles, Keenum, Foles, which of these guys do you see beating Tom Brady? Which is really all we care about here this time of year in Buffalo.
I understand that. And I would tell your proud, Patriot hating, Buffalo loving sons this. Remember, teams win games. Teams win sports. Yeah, teams win championships. I mean, we always talk about Tom Brady and how great he was in the epic comeback in Super Bowl 51. But if Dante Hightower doesn't come through with a strip sack on third and one with 7:30 to play and the Falcons up 28-12, there's zero chance that Tom Brady leads that comeback. Even if they don't get the first down on third and one and they have to punt the ball, that's 50 yards of field position and about another minute and a half off the clock, and there's no time for them to complete this incredible comeback. So the other thing, the last Super Bowl that Tom Brady won on his own, which is not true, okay, if Malcolm Butler doesn't make the interception at the goal line and they hand the ball to Marshawn Lynch, we're talking about how come Tom Brady and the Patriots haven't won a Super Bowl since Super Bowl 39.
Okay.
So it's not just about the quarterback. It's about everybody else on that team doing their job.
Of course, you're making the assumption that my boys listen to me and my kids pay attention to me, which is
not true. We all know that's not true.
So I'm talking to them for you.
Hey, Trey, I got to put you on the spot, and you guys probably won't do predictions till Friday. But I got to ask you here on this show, since we only get you today on Wednesday, who wins these two games? Which teams go to the Super Bowl?
Well, all that being said, I like Minnesota, and I like New England. And would it surprise me if Jacksonville pulled it off? No, because I do think Jacksonville is, like, just young enough not to know any better. I mean, like, Jalen Ramsey, after the divisional round, they had a celebration at the stadium.
Right.
He's like, we're going to win next week, and then we're going to win the week after that.
Right.
So basically said they're going to win the Pro Bowl, because there is the Pro Bowl in between the conference championships and the Super Bowl. But sometimes not knowing is a powerful thing. And I would not be floored if they won. However, I do have to believe that the Patriots have been the best team all year, and I'll go with the Patriots, and I will also go with the Minnesota Vikings. I just think because of the quarterback situation, they're more complete right now than Philadelphia. And Philadelphia won in a really weird way. They were -2 in the turnover differential. In the current playoff format, you're 16-145 if you're -2 or worse. So the ball just bounced Philadelphia's ways a couple of times in that game. That can't happen again.
Trey, thanks for this. We'll talk next week. We appreciate your time here today. Thanks.
You got it, guys. Talk to you soon.
Trey Wingo, the host of NFL Live on ESPN, co-host of Golic and Wingo, weekday 6 a.m. on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, and the ESPN app. I watched that show a little bit yesterday. It's a good show. It's a really good show.
You talk about the games, the two games this weekend. Going back to the beginning of this year, nobody thought that you'd have the Patriots you thought would be in this thing right now, but not the Jaguars.
Right.
Not the Eagles. Well, the Eagles, everybody, especially once they started to play, but once they lost their quarterback, it was like, all right, they're done. And not the Vikings. I had the Saints going all the way. So I started to wonder, is this like, how many people really want to see these games? They're going to watch, but are there games that people really want to watch? Because you don't have any big name quarterbacks aside from a Tom Brady. You know, I feel like there are going to be people that say, you know what, that game is going to be boring. I'll just wait until the Super Bowl.
And then a game like, you know, a finish like Minnesota New Orleans breaks out.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you're exactly. I wish I would watch it.
Why didn't I watch that game?
Right. Yeah. Thanks to Trey joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Brian Daboll's coming in to be the coordinator for the Buffalo offense. Aside from quarterback, after quarterback, what should be his top priority? Give us a call. That's our Twitter poll. We'll reset that in a moment. Love to hear from you on the telephone lines at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Second top priority for Brian Daboll, what do you see it as? Give us a call. We'll talk. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back, John Murphy and Donald Jones. We had a good show so far, I believe. Phil Savage from the Senior Bowl joined us. Trey Wingo from ESPN NFL Live. Steve Tasker coming by at 2 o'clock. You're welcome to join us as well. Our discussion deals with Brian Daboll, the new offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. And look, we all know quarterback is paramount, right? They got to figure that out. We were just talking during the break again. There's no way Daboll takes the job without having a pretty good idea of what they're leaning on, where they're headed, right?
I mean, why would you take it?
You'd have to say no.
Everybody would say, well, you know, he's coming back home to Buffalo. He's from here. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I want to know what's going on at quarterback. If I have to run this offense, I need to have a guy that I at least know who I'm working with. If it's going to be Tyrod Taylor, let me know before – I actually accept the job. If it's not going to be Tyrod Taylor, let me know that as well. But let me know your plan. And we all know Coach McDermott is a guy of plans. He has his plan in place. He and Brandon Bean. So, yeah, I'm sure they've already laid out the plan for him. And you know, I think it was a good hire. We were just talking back there, and one of our colleagues said, "Man, you bring in a college guy," and I think people forget that he's been around the NFL for a long time, been a lot of different places. Yeah, a lot of different places. But when you think about his calendar of events, I mean, this dude, everything he touches turns to gold.
He's been around a lot of championships. So if the quarterback thing in Brian Daboll's mind is set, what do you think is next on his mind? What do you think his next priority is? That's our Twitter poll. Let's recheck that. Other than quarterback, what is the first priority for Bill's new offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll? On Twitter, 42% of you responding say it's finding a number one wide receiver. I want to get back to that in a moment. 32% of you say refining the offensive line scheme. Are you a power team? Are you a zone blocking team? 15% say finding a backup running back to Shady. 11% say something else. Let's know what you think. What is the top priority for after settling on the quarterback for Brian Daboll? Finding number one wide receiver, the leader in the clubhouse, Donald. And somebody tweeted in, Kelvin Benjamin is a number one. They need a speed guy, number two. And I guess I would say this, whether you call him number one or number two or number one or number 1A, yes, Kelvin Benjamin is clearly a potent offensive weapon when he's healthy, especially next year. But you still need a dynamic playmaker outside wide receiver. I don't believe Kelvin Benjamin is that guy. You need a guy with speed who can get downfield and make plays. So that is what I'm thinking of when I think of a number one. What about you?
When I think of a true number one wide receiver, I think of Julio Jones. I mean, that's who I think of. Julio Jones is, and I don't know if you can find a Julio Jones in every draft. Yeah, good luck with that. Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, those types of guys, or even an A.J. Green type of guy. Yeah. Coming out, nobody thought Antonio Brown would be what he was going to be because he's a smaller guy. He's turned into being one of the best in the league, arguably top three in the league. But typically you think of a big body wide receiver with the combination of the size and the speed. Kelvin Benjamin lacks the speed. He lacks that ability to be able to just separate from a DB, the ability to be able to catch a screen and maybe take that all the way to the house. You know what Kelvin Benjamin, you can use him down in the red zone. We know that all too well, as they tried to do in the playoff game.
Yeah.
You know you can use him down there. You know that you can throw the ball up to him. Even out in the field, you know you can use him on dig routes, all of that stuff. He's a big body type of guy. But I don't know if you could say, man, We can do anything we want with that guy. And I think that's what a number one wide receiver is, a guy who can get down the field, a guy who can run the underneath stuff, and a guy who you can just throw a screen to and let him take it all the way to the house. And I don't think that's Kelvin Benjamin. So that's why I say you need to find a true number one guy.
Let us know what you think. After quarterback, what's the next pressing issue for Brian Daboll, the new Bills offensive coordinator? 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. We'll go to Ron in Lackawanna on the phone line. Hello, Ron. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Afternoon, guys.
Hi.
Great show again.
Thank you.
I'm going to go with the offensive line, but I think he's got the right people if they do the right type of blocking. And the guy I was really disappointed with was John Miller this year, because I thought he was at to the point where he was going to be a Pro Bowler this year, but with the coaching staff that they had went going for him, and that, I think that screwed things up there. A number two running back would be another one on my mind. Mm-hmm. A lot of teams don't have a number one receiver on their teams, so I have no problem with the receivers we have and what we might get in the off season. And I've got one more question. If San Francisco doesn't put the franchise tag on Sammy Watkins, and the price isn't too high because he hasn't shown too much, over the last few years in that would he be able to come back to Buffalo, you think? Or would we want him back in Buffalo?
I would probably say I wouldn't think that they would bring him back.
No.
And I don't think that he would come back. I could be wrong, but I don't think that they would bring him back. I think that they would go in another direction. If it's a free agent, I don't think it would be Sammy Watkins. It would be somebody else. I don't think Sammy Watkins, and he could have totally changed now, but they have enough time with him. I don't know if he fits into the locker room like they would like him to. So we saw the report. You know, we saw the big article by our buddy Tyler Dunn, and Sammy admitted himself that he wasn't the best type of teammate. He wasn't the hardest worker when he was here. So I don't think that they would actually want him back. But one of the things that you talked about was a running back. And LeSean McCoy is still one of the most dynamic running backs in the NFL. But we saw in the playoff game, and he still had a very good game, but that week, especially the week before when he got hurt, it was like, man, who's going to be that guy now? And I do think that you need to have a solid backup running back. I think that when you look at the four teams in it right now, starting with the Jaguars, the team that beat the Bills, they have Leonard Fournette, and we all know about Leonard Fournette, but they also have Ivory. They also have T.J. Yeldon, who played a good game against the Steelers. So they have a staple of running backs. So you look at the Patriots, we all know that they have a staple of running backs that do different things for them. You look at the Vikings. Now, they drafted Dalvin Cook, and they thought he was going to be the number one, but they also brought in Latavius Murray, and so that they could have those two dynamic running backs. And then you look at the other team, the Eagles. They brought in Jay Ajayi. They brought in LeGarrette Blount. I mean, I think it's important for you to have a true number one running back and then a very good backup running back just in case something happens, or just so that you can take the load off of the number one guy, especially when you have a LeSean McCoy who is – he hasn't taken the big hits and all of that stuff, but he is getting up there in age now.
He'll be 30 next year. JD will. Here's Rob in West Seneca. Rob, go ahead. You're on the air with us. Rob, you got to talk to us. Please turn down the radio. Rob, are you there, Rob? Let's go to Jose in North Carolina, and he is gone as well. So let's try Andre in Buffalo. Hi, Andre. You're on the air with us.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good.
I just have a quick question. I love the hire of the ball, the new offensive coordinator. But do you guys think we may have jumped the gun just a little bit with Todd Haley stepping down today in Pittsburgh? Because I think Haley would have been an excellent fit here. And
why do you think that, Andre? Why would you think Haley would be an excellent fit here?
Just because of his track record. No matter where he's at, Pittsburgh, when he was in Arizona, he always posted a top 10 offense. The geography is kind of similar. He's not that far from home, being a Pennsylvania native.
Yep.
He's smash mouth football. I think we have the line for that type of physical game. But then my last thing was, who are good running backs coming out that may be available in the second or third round?
Ooh,
I don't know yet.
I have no clue yet.
I'd like to give you a shout out to the Youngstown State Penguins.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Isn't there some Go Penguins cheer you can do right here?
Happy feet.
Oh, sure. the question to fit, yeah, Jagger. In fact, Haley has a house right down in Chautauqua.
He does.
So there is that. I don't know if he's a good fit, and I would trust Sean McDermott to make the decision of who he thinks would be a good fit here. He has a background, Sean does, with Dable, but as a matter of fact. And, you know, Todd Haley's had a couple of, you know, he's been around the league a little bit, including a stint as the head coach, right, in Kansas City? Wasn't
yep,
he the head coach
he
of Kansas City?
And he's had a reputation.
He's got a reputation as what? Difficult to work with?
Difficult to work with.
Kind of imperious, sort of, I don't know how to describe it. Just difficult to work with, I guess.
He's got that. If you remember, he and Ben Roethlisberger didn't see eye to eye when he first got to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Sean McDermott is trying to bring that reputation. We talk about it with the players. It's the same thing with the coaches. You're not trying to bring a guy who might try to rock the boat a little bit once he gets into the locker room because he might want to do things his way.
Right.
You want to keep things flowing the way it is right now in that locker room. You don't want to disrupt it in any way. And to be honest with you, I don't think that he said, do you think we jumped the gun, maybe hired Brian Dable a little bit too fast. I don't think that. I think when you see your guy, you go and get your guy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you wait just to see – what happens with the guys who are still in the playoffs or anything like that. Some might, and Sean McDermott has been a guy who's been methodical in everything that he does. He even said it in his press conference, we're going to be methodical. We're going to really look at everything. I wouldn't be surprised if they were already talking to Brian Dable for a while before they actually made that decision.
If Sean McDermott were smart, and I know he is, he's very smart, he's got a top dress desk drawer with names. And he's got a defensive coordinator, and there's probably four names of guys he would like to work with, may have worked with in the past, would be interested in if they came free. Offensive coordinator, offensive, probably every single position group, every major position group, he's got a couple of names of guys that he's thinking, if we ever have an opening or if we want to create an opening, these are the guys I'd look at. I'm pretty certain that's the way a guy like McDermott would work. And Brian Dable clearly had to be on that list.
I would think so.
Was Haley on that list? I don't know.
Not sure.
All right, we'll break. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Yes, we're back. John Murphy and Donald Jones back in the saddle after a couple of days off. Good to be back. Feels good, doesn't it, now that we're into it in an hour and a half or so?
It does. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to lie. The first – we always talk about when we come back from a weekend, the Monday is like, oh, all right, I got to get back into this thing. But when you have 5 days in a row, you really got to get back into it. It took me a good 15, 20 minutes at the top. I feel good now, though.
Good. Yeah, I feel like we never left. Hey, we were talking about Brian Dable coming to Buffalo. They have his replacement down in Alabama. They are promoting their wide receivers coach, co-offensive coordinator Mike Locksley takes over as offensive coordinator. Did you see how much, I guess I knew this, did you see how much the report was, how much Dable made as OC in Alabama?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it $1.2 million?
Yes.
As the offensive coordinator?
As the offensive coordinator.
I love college football.
Sheesh. I mean, especially if you're a coach. If you can go somewhere and make $1 million and then go and then win a championship and then get another job, back up into the NFL. And then he got like a $200,000 bonus for winning the national championship.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's like, man, that is.
It's a great country. It really is. Offensive coordinator making $1 million. Hey, let's take your calls.
He made more than the president of the school. The president of Alabama makes about $700,000.
Amazing. They're generating income. You know, nobody's losing money down there.
Right.
It's just amazing. Here's Jose on the line. Jose, thanks for ringing us back. What's up? How are you today?
Not bad, my friend. Listen, guys, you guys said something that really intrigued me. Logically, if you think about an interview between McDermott and Dable there, how can you logically lay out a game plan when you know you have four picks in the first two rounds?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're not guaranteed, because it takes two to dance, to be able to move up to get a quarterback. So I'm curious about that, because how can you sit there and tell Dable, okay, we're going to get Sam Donald?
Right. You're right. You can't.
When you're not sure. So my point to that is, as much as I can't believe, I'm glad I'm not back in New York. My friends would be throwing things at me. I not like Tyrod as a person, but he's got to go. Why not keep Tyrod? Give me maybe Lamar Jackson falls to you at 21.
Yeah.
Why not keep the first four picks? Give me a stud linebacker, defensive. Just give me four good starters. Use Tyrod, and draft a quarterback next year. I just can't picture how you can lay out a game plan when there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to get the guy that you want.
You're right, Jose. That's a good plan. That's a good thought. Don't you think, Donald and Jose, the conversation is probably more along the lines of, look, we're deep into speculation here, but if you're telling Brian Daboll, you're outlining your plan, you might say to him, hey, we're going to draft a quarterback, so we're going to ask you to develop a new quarterback, and we're going to, A, either keep Tyrod, or B, sign a veteran to play too.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it can go much, because of your point, Jose, there's no guarantees in the draft. You probably can't get much more specific than that.
Especially where you're sitting. This is where we're sitting in draft.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard for us to move up to get the guy who we might truly, truly covet. But we do have a lot of draft capital. Let's not forget that. They can do what they want. If they truly want a guy, I mean, they got first-rounders, second-rounders, first-rounder. I mean, they can do a lot of different things. They can trade players this year. If they truly, truly like a guy and want to move up that far, ultimately, I think it's more of a general outline, general plan. It's not like, okay, we want
– we're going to get this guy.
Yeah, we're not saying we want Sam Darnold, so we're going to move up for him, because you don't know that. But it is, we want a quarterback. We just got to figure out, and we won't know. And Brian Daboll's smart. He's been around the NFL. He understands how this thing works, how you trade for different players, how you trade draft picks, all of that stuff. He understands. He gets it. I would, if I was Brian Daboll, just want to know, is it going to be Tyrod Taylor, or is your plan to move on from Tyrod Taylor?
And I would just say the only people that the decision makers here can talk about with certainty are Taylor and Peterman.
Right.
They could say to Brian Daboll, Tyrod's in our plans, Tyrod's not in our plans. Nathan Peterman's in our plans, he's not in our plans. Other than that, draft picks, free agents,
who knows?
It's up in the air. But I'm sure he has a roadmap. They gave him a roadmap. This is kind of what we're trying to do here. You have to.
You have to. Yeah.
I'm sure he is. Here is Greg in Rochester. Greg, hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing today?
Good.
Great.
My question is about Reggie Ragland. I think when we traded him, we got a seventh-round pick for him?
No, a fourth-rounder next year, 2019. Fourth-rounder in 2019.
A fourth-rounder. Will that go up? Because he played most of the end of the year. Would that go up?
Not sure if it was conditional on snaps or not. Are you aware?
I'm not sure.
I don't know the answer.
But that's next year's draft anyway. It's 2019, Greg. Don't forget that. So we're not even paying attention to that one this year.
We're just plugging into 2018 draft, still a couple of months away. Steve Tasker standing by to join us, the Bills Wall of Famer, NFL on CBS. He was on the sidelines last Sunday down at Heinz Field for the Steelers' meltdown against Jacksonville. We'll talk with Steve about that. You can ring us up and give us your thoughts as well. Lines are open for Steve when he joins us next hour, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Steve Tasker when we return, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
From One Bills Drive, where the players are off, coaches are off, but the Bills have a new offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, hired to the job a couple of days ago. And the Bills found out today that cornerback Tre'Davious White has been named to the all-rookie defense by the Pro Football Writers of America. White, with a sensational rookie season, led all rookies with 18 passes defensed. He was also a Pro Football Focus Rookie of the Year. Tre'Davious White, Pro Football Writers, all-rookie defensive team. Eric Wood, an alternate for this year's Pro Bowl, is waiting for the call to see if he gets to go to Orlando for the Pro Bowl game. Marquise Pouncey of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who was questionable going into last week's playoff game, has a hip injury. He is a starter for the Pro Bowl. If he cannot go, Eric Wood would most likely go to the Pro Bowl. Todd Haley will not return as offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh, the Steelers allowing him to walk. Haley's contract expired after the season. His six-year run is over with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Quarterbacks coach Randy Fickner considered the favorite to replace Todd Haley there. Leonard Fournette, Jacksonville Jaguars rookie running back, not injured after being involved in a minor car crash yesterday. According to the Florida Highway Patrol, Fournette was rear-ended during a three-car chain reaction collision. Before leaving the scene, Fournette autographed his bumper and gave it to a DOT worker. Steelers assistant Mike Munchak has declined a second interview opportunity with the Arizona Cardinals to become their head coach. Munchak's been Pittsburgh's offensive line coach since 2014. And Seattle Seahawks changes continue. Ken Norton Jr. has been hired as defensive coordinator. Mike Solari hired as the Seahawks' new offensive line coach. The Buffalo Sabres in action tomorrow night. They head to New York to play the Rangers tomorrow night. Sabres coming back from their bye week, practicing today. They'll play the Rangers at Madison Square Garden tomorrow night at 7:30. It is a nationally televised game on NBCSN. Sabres and the Rangers tomorrow night as they come back from their bye. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and joined in studio by Steve Tasker, our regular weekly visit with the former Bills special teamer from the NFL on CBS. And on the sideline Sunday, Heinz Field in Pittsburgh for the Steelers' home playoff loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I didn't realize, Steve, till I turned on the radio Sunday, hearing you on the sidelines. You drove down there Sunday morning. I guess you told me that. It didn't register. You hopped in the car Sunday.
Well, I saw you at the wedding on Saturday night. And yeah, we took off. Actually, Chris Moore, who was in town for the wedding, him and his wife were staying at the house. He drove down with me.
He went down to Pittsburgh.
He's got some friends who work for the Jaguars. They got him a pregame pass, and he came up, stayed in the booth, in the radio booth, with the guys at Westwood One, and came down, said hello to some people.
Do you have an assignment this week on Westwood One?
I do not. I'm actually going to be in my little feety pajamas and sitting up on the couch, hanging out.
You got a onesie?
Yeah, get my big onesie on.
You got a onesie.
It might be the first time I've been warm for a game in about 2 months.
I was going to ask you, it's cold in Pittsburgh.
It's cold. Yeah.
It's always damp there, too.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, the way they got that set up, and I was surprised by this. I wasn't surprised by it. It makes sense. But Steelers' home side is in the shade at this time of year, and it's 15 degrees colder on that side. I stayed the whole day on Jaguars' sideline because it was sunny and warm over there. Warmer.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously I knew I was going to – I do a lot of sideline work, so I've got gear for it. But sooner or later, it starts creeping, gaining on you. You can't get on top of it, you know. But I was actually comfortable the other day, except my face started to sting a little bit at the end of the game.
Were you at the game thinking, okay, next week – I'll be in my onesie on the couch.
Oh, yeah. My little bunny ears on top of it, you know. Yeah, a little outfit. I'll be having my feet up.
You got to tweet that out.
Nah.
What's your best advice to fans, I guess, or anybody on the sideline if they find themselves there, to staying warm in an NFL game?
Well, listen, all five of my kids could tell you exactly what I'll tell you right now. You can't put it on if you don't bring it with you. Bring everything.
Is that
like
life advice?
Bring,
life coach advice?
Yes.
Not just staying warm, but
life coach. Bring it with you. You may need it. And if you don't, put it on. It'll make at least one part of your body warmer.
Right.
I bring everything I can possibly think of to the game to keep warm. And it works.
But aren't you carrying, like, suitcases?
No. Listen, when I was with CBS doing it, I'd bring a roller bag to the stadium. You know, we always travel light. You know how it is. When you go in these games, you know, you take as little as you can. You want to check a baggage. I forget it. I said, I check a bag, and it's full of Arctic gear.
All warm stuff.
Yeah. I got the 40 below muck boots I wear. I got snow pants, long johns, and then a layer in between the long johns and the snow pants. And then that's usually what I do lower. And then upper, you know, I got the parka layers. And the layers. And
so I want to write this down. You can't put it on if you don't take it with you.
That's right.
You're going to write it on the same
sheet. You can't put it on if you don't take it with you.
Have you ever seen Donald's famous quote?
What's Donald's
famous? This is a good one, too. I wrote this one down, too. Most of the things I say I said, I usually said them. That's the truth. So I'm going to put this right next to that. You can't put it on if you don't take it with you.
You can't put it on if you don't bring it with. Yeah.
I like that. Okay.
And that's, you know, I've told my kids that forever. You know, you here in Buffalo, you know that. You throw the kids into the SUV. You drive down south, go skiing, and, you know, you get there, and invariably somebody, you know, forgot their gloves, forgot their hat, forgot whatever, you know, and then they're – so you
– When you were young, did your kids, or even now, do they ever ask to go to the games that you're actually covering?
Well, I ask them to go with me. I get somebody so I don't have to go by myself. Nobody go. I can't. I'm busy. Thanks, Dad. It is totally – the shine is totally off my job. Right. No, that's not true. Now, I did take my son to a championship game 1 year. I was doing the radio thing, and we were on the sidelines for Pittsburgh-Baltimore a few years back, and that was –
I think that's profound. You can't put it on. I'm not talking about warmth here. Now I'm talking about just life in general. You can't put it on if you don't take it with you. I think that's profound. Yeah. Almost as strong as most of the things I say I said, I usually said them.
Yeah.
you can wrap your brain around that. Get back to me. Anyway, Steve Tasker's in studio with us. The phone line's open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let me just put that there so you remember that.
I can't believe you still have this
thing. I reference it every once in a while. I think
for those of you who don't know, Murph is a hoarder of – of papers.
Yes, look at this.
He keeps a lot of
papers. Yeah,
it'll be next year.
At the end of the season, away. We'll have an intervention.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be next year is starting, and he's like, let me throw this stuff away from last year and get ready for this year.
I have to do that.
When is your? I got to ask you guys, when's your calendar? You're like, when do you flip the page now? Is it after the Super Bowl, Pro Bowl? Is it
last week? We had that
really?
Week off.
You're like kicking it off, and now you're thinking about 2018.
Yeah,
now.
We did. We had a week off.
You're not talking about the Super Bowl playoffs?
We'll get there.
No, we are talking about the playoffs and stuff, but on Bill's stuff, we kind of kicked the tires last week.
We had those five straight days off, Steve.
I know. That's so nice.
It was amazing.
It's kind of nice.
I still can't get over it. All right. Are you surprised that Todd Haley's out in Pittsburgh? You were there on that sideline. Are you really?
Oh, my God. And listen, I've covered him, and he's sometimes a hard, got a little bit of Jim Harbaugh in him. You know, yeah. He's a hard guy to deal with for a long period of time. But here's my observation, and I think owners everywhere kind of forget this. Everybody wants a harmonious workplace, and I get that. But some of the best staffs I've ever seen work, even the ones here in Buffalo, when there was a little tension on that staff, it was a good thing. Because you had guys arguing over different ways to do something. And when you argue, when you've got a guy throwing something at you, he really believes in it, say, wait a minute, what about this A, B, and C? And this guy's, well, what is D, D, and F? You know, and da, da, da. And you get some healthy conflict in there. You usually make the best choices possible because you have hashed it out and all the details that are important. So and Todd Haley is a guy that does that. He is not afraid of confrontation and having an argument with guys. He's got a strong personality. And he knows a lot of football. The guy's been around the league forever. And obviously, I mean, they hung 42 points on the best, defense, one of the, in my mind, best defense left in the game, left in the playoffs. They hung 42 points on him, scored 21 points when the chips were down. I mean, they had it. They were rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And it kicked him to the curb. I mean, I don't get that. I mean, I get maybe Ben Roethlisberger has a little juice and said, hey, listen, I'm tired of dealing with this guy. Absolutely. But you know what? Listen, you gotta step back for a minute. And that's just like the minority owners who've been reported saying, listen, we need to get – you got to step back for a minute. You got to look at the big picture. You're an idiot if you fire Mike Tomlin. You are an absolute stone-cold idiot. If you're going to fire Mike Tomlin after the career he's put together in Pittsburgh with different coaches, different Dick LeBeau's on the staff, now he's gone. Yet, and all these guys going on. What are you thinking?
They're in it every year.
What are you thinking?
Well, every year. I mean.
And everybody goes, it's all Ben Roethlisberger. Well, no, it's not.
It's not.
No, it's not.
It's always interesting when I see people, reporters and just fans, but especially reporters say, oh, he's the biggest cheerleader in football. And I'm like.
What are you talking about?
Well, you've met in production meetings with Mike Tomlin, and you've met him, you know him, right?
Yeah.
This is not an original question. I've heard people ask this. Some of the reporters you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Where does his expertise lie? What does he know?
There's a bunch of things.
Let's hear it.
His strength is being a leader. He gets those players to believe in themselves using whatever. They are always thinking the same thing. Mm-hmm. They are always on it. Now, there's a couple of things. Those couple of guys went rogue and started putting bulletin board material out there. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he dealt with that. He never deals with that publicly. Never deals with it publicly. He does it privately, but he does. And those guys get back in the line. He handles those guys and gets them thinking the same thing all the time, and he does it in such a way that they foster an atmosphere of love and respect in the locker room. He is a guy you can get behind. Secondly, he does not talk X's and O's with the media. But when he talks to us in the production meeting, and I've talked with him and I've heard him talk with when he got – I was in the production meeting with those championship games and stuff. He knows the numbers. He knows, you know, he knows why they're doing this, what their plan is, what they're doing and what they're doing and what they're going to try and do, what situational football they're going to try and do this in. Mm-hmm. He knows both sides of the football and what they're going to plan on doing. But he will not discuss it with the media. He doesn't give them that. So they think he doesn't know. He's cheerleading. He doesn't know anything. Right. Listen, he knows it all very well. And he does that purposely, and he could not care less what the beat writer for the Baltimore Sun thinks. You know, he really couldn't. And he does foster, and I'll say this too, he also has the ability to, in the Pittsburgh Steelers, they always have, and he said it in this press conference this last week, and they were kind of hounding him about the way the game went and how they got kind of trolled by the Jacksonville Jaguars after they, you know, gave him the bulletin board material. And he goes, listen, there's always a storm going on around us. I think his team, and he thinks it's a good thing. He doesn't mind that. and it sounds like there's all this turmoil and all this stuff going on. Listen, when you walk through that, if you were a fly on the wall of that locker room, it's a great locker room. They have great leaders. They have great players. Showed a lot of courage this year, releasing
Harrison.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was time to do that. When it came out, Harrison wasn't on board with him anymore.
Right.
And it's hard to just release. And I've told you this a million times. It rarely ends well for the great ones.
Right.
There may be an atomic bomb go off when Tom Brady leaves. It may not go well.
Yeah.
It may not end well New England, and it may not end well in Pittsburgh with Ben. It really rarely ends well because the quarterback always, I want one more year, and they're like, listen, you stink. You can't play anymore. So it's always that. So Mike Tomlin keeps that franchise steady as – he is the rock when everything else is swirling around. Those guys rally to him big time. Big time.
So what went wrong? How did they give up almost half a hundred to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who scored one touchdown the week before?
Let me tell you.
That didn't surprise me, though, because of the absence of Shazier. And they haven't really, really been good against the run all year. You know,
Shazier
and going against that team, they're going to run the ball. Blake Bortles had a little better game than you're typically used to seeing him have, but you have a team that can actually run the ball. The Steelers don't typically play well against that team.
I'll tell you what, too. You could tell. That game kicked off. Jacksonville was angry. They were focused and angry. They played with emotional content that Pittsburgh wasn't ready to match.
Right.
They jumped out 14 points, jumped out 28 points, 21 points.
They
got 28-7. Mm-hmm. They hit them in the mouth because they were ticked at the tweets and the disrespect that was coming out of the Pittsburgh locker room. That, in my opinion, is the overriding reason why that game went to Jacksonville. It was the start they got because of the emotional content given to them by the Steelers in those tweets. I really believe that. You can say, well, it's just a couple of words. Guys says, listen, that's it. Those guys were ticked on both sides of the football. Yeah, Jacksonville can't score 45 points playing against air.
Does Mike Tomlin have to answer for that?
Well, he can't control his players. Once it's out there, what's he going to do?
Right.
He won't publicly spank them. You know, he's not going to turn him over his knee in public. But I'll tell you what, you're in the playoffs. What are you going to do, bench two of your best guys? You can't. You already got, missing Shazier. He's in a bad spot. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, don't be surprised if those guys don't suit up again next year.
Mm. You know, there's a theory out there, and I listened to a lot of it on Sports Talk Radio over the last few days, that Tomlin, Tomlin has lost control kind of the tenor of that organization. There's people who think that, and believe me, I don't think he should be fired, but people who think that the Steelers have gone kind of rogue the last year or so. If you look at some of the suspensions they've had, some of the players they've had get in trouble, the stupid thing with the anthem where one player was out there, the rest were in the locker room, he didn't really have a handle on that.
Last year, hey, Antonio Brown in the locker room.
Antonio Brown.
Listen, I'll tell you what, though, the anthem stuff is really a difficult, complicated issue.
They didn't handle it well.
And you tell me, name me a team that really did handle it well. I don't know.
Buffalo Bills,
I would
say did.
Some did.
Yeah.
Then there was a thing when Shady didn't. You know, mm-hmm. he had one guy down there on the time doing stretches.
Yeah.
Shady didn't, and Shady apologized for it later. But, so even the players themselves are kind of like, Mike Tomlin is not responsible for the patriotism of his players.
I know. I don't want to get caught up in the anthem.
But there's a number
what about the
every
overall,
issue.
How does he not set a tone or a tenor or an atmosphere like, we don't trash talk the Jacksonville Jaguars on Twitter before they come in here for a playoff game.
I agree. That's true. That's a bad look for any team. And I can't believe he didn't address it before the fact.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing.
It's hard when you have – I mean, he's done a very good job over the years of bringing in certain types of players. But when you have all of these different egos on a team, and they have a lot of different egos out there.
Yeah.
Even with the James Harrison stuff, you had him come out and say what he said, and then you had a bunch of guys on the team come out and say, you didn't want to be here. You know, another team, even like here, Coach McDermott might say, we're not commenting on any of that stuff. You don't go and talk to the media and say, he didn't want to be here.
Right.
He has now moved on, you know. So I can see why people will say that he's lost control, but it's hard to manage that many different egos, and Antonio Brown, who is one of the biggest stars in the game.
Listen, he mismanaged him all the way to the championship game with an injury to one of his best defensive players. And, you know, you can say what you want. They scored 42 points on a team that couldn't score anything, and was one of the best defenses in the league. It's a little bit like 2 years ago when the Bills fired their offensive coordinator after they gave up 35 points in the Jets in week two. You know, right. I mean, what are you thinking? I mean, right. that's what I don't get. And I'm sure Mike Tomlin got a lot of pressure from Art Rooney to make a change at offensive corner. Plus, probably there's probably some relationships, and obviously it's come out of there that Ben and Haley are banging heads a lot. You know, that happens a lot in the NFL.
Sure.
And I get it. But listen, to say Mike Tomlin has lost control, I don't think – listen, I've seen other teams where the guy lost control. The Pittsburgh Steelers don't look like that. I mean, you look back across – I mean, look at what happened to the Giants in the last year and a half.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, those guys went from being a perennial playoff contender to number one pick.
Yeah.
Almost.
I just think it's hard. I mean, you even look at Doug Marrone down in Jacksonville, right?
That's
and
where
he's
get to next,
and
yeah.
he's a guy who has he came in here with the mentality, basically a military type of mentality. You guys were here. I wasn't here, but from talking to former players, guys that I know, they're like, man, this dude is crazy. And he came with that type of mentality, thinking that you can keep everybody in check. You can keep everybody in check. You look down in Jacksonville, you have him as the head coach, and you have Tom Coughlin, who is another guy who has been his reputation as a guy who's hard on the players, all of that stuff. And you look at Jalen Ramsey. I mean, this dude says whatever he wants to say.
Right.
You look at after the game, he goes back. He's like, we're going to win the Super Bowl. We're going to make it to the Super Bowl, and we're going to win it.
They did
forget the Patriots, but we're going
to
win this whole
exactly
thing.
They did exactly to the Patriots what the Steelers did to them to motivate them to go out there and win. They just did the exact – they just I was like, what are you doing?
Right, exactly.
Let me tell you something. The Patriots are going to lump those guys up.
Well, before we get to that, Steve.
Just
and
for that.
Before we get to that, our old buddy Doug Marrone, who I know is at or near the top of the list of villains in Buffalo, recent Buffalo sports history, right? A lot of people don't like him.
Yeah.
Right. And we had him here. We knew him here. But there he is in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
You have to give him a little credit for, scoring 10 points and beating the Bills in a playoff game and then scoring 45 the next week and winning a playoff game. Marrone's got to get something credit out of this.
And I'll tell you.
It's hard to do something for many of us.
He gets some credit. Tom Coughlin gets a lot of credit. Those two, I think Tom Coughlin is the most hands-on president of an organization you'll find in the National Football League. He has
really?
Been since the day he took it. And I think his experience, and if you want to give some credit to Marrone, give him some credit for giving Tom Coughlin listening to what he's telling him and having an open-door policy and having him on the practice field every day and talking every day on the practice field. And, that's a close relationship. And give Marrone some credit for cultivating that and gleaning what he can from Tom Coughlin and those two guys having the relationship they do. No question Doug Marrone has put together a great season for the Jaguars, and he does deserve some credit for that. But that's a unique atmosphere that was created by Coughlin, and they do see things the right way, and I think that's a smart move by Coughlin, getting a guy in there that saw it the same way he did.
Now, you have a few defenses now in the championship game. You look at the NFC side, you have the Eagles, who have gotten there with defense. You got the Vikings, who their defense is a good defense. On this side, you have the Jaguars and the Patriots. And you look at that Jacksonville defense and how good it is, even though they just gave up a bunch of points, you don't think they have enough to be able to shut down that Patriots offense and move on to the Super Bowl?
Well, I don't know. Shutting the Patriots down, you hold them below 20 points now. I don't think you're going to hold Tom Brady to below 20 points at home in the playoffs with their health as healthy as they are. They're just not going to do it,
right.
And I'll tell you this: I'll bet Blake Bortles has some pretty good yardage game. I think that's one of the things the Patriots have done all year. They'll give, and I heard John Gruden say it on Monday Night Football. Bill Belichick and that defense in New England will give you yardage for Christmas.
Right.
They don't care, but you can't score on them, and that's the big difference. You can shorten the game yourself; you're just not getting any points out of it. They're going to get points. They are going to score points in New England, and Jacksonville's going to have to match them. I really believe that, and I think it's going to be really difficult for them to do it.
The Patriots now, based on their win over Tennessee, do we assume that the Patriots are back all the way? Everything's cool. There's no friction. There's no problems.
I'm not saying everything's honky dory, but I'm saying that none of it is earth shattering. I mean, certainly there's been some disagreements, and there is the thing with Tom Brady and his trainer being thrown out of the building. I think whenever you start getting conflicting information from one of the trainers and from a guy outside the organization with the trainers inside the organization. Something's got to give, and it's not going to be the organization. That guy has to leave, and that's typical. And I think that's probably a riff that Brady didn't like, but I think he's got to see the wisdom of it as well. And everything else about Garoppolo, about all of that stuff, I think that's all overblown.
See, I think as you talked about, it doesn't end well for the great ones. I think that's the beginning of it right there. And we're not talking about physical play on the field, but we're talking about a Bill Belichick who wanted to probably move on from Brady because he has no soul, but he has to have no soul because he's a coach. He wanted to move on from Brady and go with Garoppolo because he can see this guy's our guy for the next 10 to 15 years. The owner doesn't want to, so it's not even just the play on the field when it doesn't end well for the great ones. It's the entire organization.
Oh, that's
because you'll have conflicting.
That's correct.
Everybody's bumping heads on, we should move on from this guy. No, we shouldn't move on from
Tom
this
guy. Brady is part of the Kraft family. I mean, they treat him, and they're not going to let him go. He's going to play as long as he wants to play, and the Kraft's going to see that he does. That puts Bill in a spot where, in a league where it's almost impossible to anticipate and find a franchise quarterback. The Patriots have done it the way they should have. They draft a guy almost every year. They finally get one that says, hey, well, you know what? We got one.
Mm-hmm.
This Garoppolo kid can play out of nowhere. He was in the right spot. We've got he developed. This is our guy. We've got him. And now Tom, 17th year, he's going to be 40. Hey, it's perfect. It's like Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck without the tank year, right? So we're gold. And the owner says, you know what? That's not going to work because Tom's going to keep playing. Well, we can't keep – we got to keep Garoppolo. Well, you got to – you know, he's like he's bummed. He's that's a – that puts your spot, your team in a bad spot. And Belichick is totally dispassionate. He would
You're going to say something about grandmothers.
Yeah. I don't know if there's anything – I really don't know that there's any – there is no sacred cow that he will not throw under the bus if it's for the good of his team.
Right.
Nothing. And I think he got to that point where Tom Brady was that sacred cow, and he says, you know, it's time to move on. And the rest of the organization said no.
Here's how I believe – and we've been reading tea leaves from Foxborough for decades here trying to figure out what's going on up there. But here's how I believe we know the change is afoot. Both coordinators are on the way out, which indicates to me that they know we're at the end of the line here. Maybe one more year with Brady, I don't know. Right? The fact that both Patricia and McDaniels are ready to exit when this season ends, to me, is the signal, more than anything else that's been written about, talked about. Well, to me, that's the signal that things are about to change.
The only change that really is means anything to me about New England is if something happens with their head coach.
I think when Brady is done, especially after if all of this stuff is true and he and the owner have clashed because of Garoppolo, I think this could be the point where Belichick is like, you know what, I'm done. When Brady retires, I'm done too. You moved on from the guy that I thought could keep our franchise in the at the top of this thing. I'm going to go ahead and walk
away. Well, here's the thing. There's only one of two things that had happened now. Either one, those coordinators think Bill is going to leave and I've got no shot at the job, or I don't want to be that guy that takes over for Bill.
Right.
Because nobody can do it like him.
Right.
One of those two things happen. I don't know which one it is, but I can't believe both those guys thinking, I don't want any part of the head coaching job of the New England Patriots. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I think something's afoot. If you say Bill's leaving at some point. He said publicly he doesn't want to do this like Marv Levy, coach when he's 70. Well, he's 66.
Yeah.
Well, do the math. And Tom's 40.
Right.
So they win it this year. What, does Bill pull the ripcord right away, say, I'm done, you should have kept Garoppolo?
Maybe.
I would have left you. That's fine. But why would both coordinators pull the ripcord? Why would they – if they've got to be the front runners, right?
They would look at it the same way.
Unless Robert Kraft's going to start head coaching.
But they would look at it the same way. You just let our future franchise quarterback go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I might as well go ahead somewhere else where, as you listen about Josh McDaniels possibly going to Indianapolis, well, at least I know they got an Andrew Luck there. Nobody knows what's going on with him. But at this point, when Brady retires, and we know it's going to be in the next couple years because, I'm sorry, Father Time does take over, you don't have anybody else in the waiting right now. So what do you do moving forward? What do you got to draft one and develop one? We already had that guy.
I know he's probably but you know what? Bill Belichick went 11-5 with Matt Cassel, and Matt, former teammates and former guys who knew him, he couldn't play dead in a Western movie. That guy was bad. He was bad. And they went 11-5 with him. They went 3-1 with Garoppolo. Right. They won some games with Jacoby Brissett. I mean, they can win. Mm-hmm. They got a way to do it. I don't think that would scare Bill Belichick if he was 55. Mm-hmm. I don't think that would be the thing that, you know, thinks, you know, since Tom's going, I'm going. I can't do it without him. I don't think he thinks that.
Yeah.
I don't think he thinks that.
You think it could be them just saying, I don't want to step into those shoes because Bill Belichick he's done it this way, and if I don't know if we can do it the same way moving forward, I'd rather just go to another franchise. I mean, it might be bad for once Brady is done and once Belichick is done, it could be bad for that franchise for a long time.
Could be.
So if they could be looking at it like, you know what? We've had a great run. I might as well move on to another organization. And look, Murph wants to.
No, I wait that day. I look forward to that day. I want the Patriots.
That's my sons. They don't care if the fate of the entire world rests on it. They are not rooting for the Patriots.
No.
They wish them the worst.
I want the Patriots I grew up with Steve Grogan and those guys stumbling around. Those are the Patriots I grew up with. I want to see that again.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
All right, a break here. Steve, we got to get your thoughts on the changes here at One Bills Drive, including Brian Daboll. You know, I bet you know Brian Daboll.
Yeah, we're acquainted.
Yeah. All right, we're going to talk about that with Steve Tasker, who is with us from the NFL on CBS, Bills Wall of Famer. We'll take some of your phone calls as well at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy with Donald Jones and Steve Tasker's here for a couple of more minutes. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Brian Daboll announced on Sunday as the Bills' new offensive coordinator, a guy who has Western New York roots, Stephen. Roots at St. Francis, right around the corner in Athol Springs, where your boys went to school. So
that's right.
I'm guessing that you probably know Brian Daboll.
We're acquainted. I've spoken with him on a number of occasions. Nothing. I mean, it's not like we exchanged Christmas cards or anything, but always make it a point to say hello to him even when he was with the Patriots. And I think one of the things about his hiring that intrigues me is that the Patriots are really good at using what they got, you know, personnel wise. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that I've always thought sets NFL teams apart from college teams. You know, you don't just recruit the best athletes and turn them loose. You deploy them with techniques and routes and combinations and styles of offense and technique, you know, to enhance what they do best. You know, you never ask them to do stuff they can't do.
Right.
I think that intrigues me about what he could do with this offense and these players.
We had Phil Savage on, and he talked about him being able to adapt, coming from New England, mm-hmm. going down to Alabama. And he also talked about how, you know, you kind of have – what did he call them? On different things that you can do. I forgot how Phil
– Guardrails.
Guardrails.
He said Nick Saban put guardrails
on
the offense.
But ultimately –
Don't be crazy. Don't turn it over.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But ultimately, you did have a Jalen Hurts who wasn't the best passer. And we saw it in the championship game as he got benched and put somebody else in. So he did adapt to what he had down there at Alabama.
In-game.
Right, in-game. Yeah, he definitely adapted in-game. But ultimately getting here – I mean, and we were talking about this, what would be his type of offense, number one? Would he say, you know, I could actually work with the Tyrod Taylor, or I would rather work with a true pocket passer like we had in New England?
Right. Well, yeah, everybody would, you know, like you had in New England would be.
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about Brady, but a pocket passer, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's you're right, and I think that's one of the things that probably was going on in the interview process. And what do you think? I mean, it's a whole different animal down in Alabama where you're playing Division I football and you get these guys for 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. In the NFL, you get them for, you know, 60.
Yeah.
And you you spend a lot of time teaching and installing and, you know, coaching up guys on their technique and why you're running it, how you're running it, why you're running it the exact way you're doing it, and why it's different than you ran it the way you ran it last week.
Right.
All of that stuff gets thrown into the mix, and I think the thing that sets it, and I think one of the things that probably helped him in his career is the fact that he had to, you know, now he can jump back up to the NFL knowing everything you know about using the guys you have the best way you can and getting the most out of them. Even the Twitter poll, I mean, alludes to that and what he's going to be doing and who he's going to be working
yeah.
with.
Yeah, let's look at the Twitter poll. Other than quarterback, and we're polling Bills fans on this, other than quarterback, what's the first priority for the Bills' new offense coordinator, Brian Daboll? So, you know, quarterback would be top of the list. What's after that? On Twitter, our respondents, 43% say finding the number one wide receiver, 32% say refining the scheme for the offensive line, 15% say finding a backup running back, 11% say something else. Would you care to weigh in on that, Steve, or do you have something else in mind?
Well, I've always thought that one of the most important aspects of your entire team is your offensive line. I think you got to have the right guys up there. You got to have depth, and you got to have size and speed. You got to have guys that are athletes up there that are big. And I think and you go back to the offensive line 2 years ago and 3 years ago when they led the league in rushing, they were a good, strong, powerful offensive line.
Right.
And they had some depth, and I think they need to get back to that. I think they had some, you know, Cordy Glenn was an in-and-out prospect this year. Chantrell Henderson was a question mark a lot of the year and was in and out of the lineup and still hasn't, you know, really gotten it together health-wise. Deion Dawkins came in and played pretty well. I mean, but you still – and now, you know, Eric Wood, Richie Incognito, those guys are getting a little long in the tooth. I mean, are they going to be able to come back and be as productive? Although they had a really good season this year, I thought. You know, you got some question marks there, and I think if you can get your offensive line up and running – I mean, listen, I don't want to take any away from Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, but –
There have been a lot of
quarterbacks and a lot of running backs and who would have played had really good careers having that offensive line that Dallas Cowboys did 2 years ago.
Let's take a call for Steve while he's with us for a couple of more minutes. Dan from Buffalo. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the air.
How you doing, guys? Great show.
Thanks, Dan.
Steve, visualizing you in a onesie, it doesn't go well. I just think
don't knock it till you've seen it. You know, I just got to tell you,
those models on TVs with the pajamagram and you standing next to them.
Damn, onesies are in, man.
Yeah, that's okay.
Murph has one too.
Yeah, mine is a two.
Oh boy.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah. Well, I just think if we go try to get a franchise quarterback, I think we're missing a point. All the quarterbacks that we've drafted in the past never had really a coach. We need a franchise coach, quarterback coach, to come in and teach him what to do and how to do it in the NFL. And, you know, you have one guy in mind who you played with, someone that's played with Jim Kelly, coached Peyton Manning, coached Philip Rivers, has done an amazing job with Carson, with Wentz. I can't think of his first name. Carson Wentz. You get a guy like Frank Reich and you know, if the Pagulas are listening, back up the truck. Pay this guy.
Well, you know, Frank's the offensive coordinator down there in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I don't see him to be demoted.
Or lateral movement.
Well, yeah, you know, you make him an assistant coach along with the quarterback position, but you got to have somebody to coach the quarterback. We've wasted too many draft picks over the years on supposed great quarterbacks that weren't coached. And I think you know, that doesn't waste any draft picks either.
Dan, you got it. It's a great point. There's no question, and I'll give you an example one of the guys you're talking about, Jim Kelly. Later in his career, when he got Teddy Marchabrota in '87, and they started rolling, and Jimmy really got good. They changed over to Jim Schaffner, and we loved Jim. Jim was a good offensive mind, but Jimmy said at that point in his career, he kind of stopped getting better. You know, Ted Marchabrota was a kind of coach, a quarterback whisperer, who always got Jim to improve every year. He was getting better and better and better in certain aspects of his game, and there are certain coaches who do that. I'm like you, Dan. I don't think you can put a price on a guy, and it doesn't have to be one guy. You can say it is, but it's not. It's a group of guys. It's the offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, and it's the backup quarterback, and it's also the running back. It's a lot of people, and it's an atmosphere that speaks to whatever quarterback you're talking to. And I'll tell you, give an example, and I'll exaggerate to give an example. Tom Brady wouldn't be the quarterback he is today if he'd have been taken by another team. He wouldn't be the quarterback he is today if he'd have been coached by a different quarterback coach or in a different system. There are a lot of quarterbacks who might have been better. You look back at David Carr, who was a great quarterback who went to Houston and struggled because his offensive line wasn't there. So to put it all on the quarterback coach, yeah, I see your point. There's no question it's an atmosphere and a coaching staff and a communication process that gets this guy's mind to click around his job of being quarterback. There's no doubt that coaching is paramount to that. But coaching is part of an atmosphere that is tailored to that quarterback's ability to learn and what he does best. So it is a chemistry test. There's no easy answer to how you get whatever quarterback you get, how you're going to make it work. But to your point, you're right. You can draft Johnny Unitas or John Elway, and if they don't have the right atmosphere, they're going to stink.
What about – and we're talking about quarterbacks here and where they should go with the quarterback, and it could have been what was brought up in the interview process. Do you think what was also brought up in the interview process – at least from Brian Daboll, was if you're going to hire me as the offensive coordinator, I need these guys to coach with me on my offense. Could we see more changes coming on the offense?
Maybe. I think more likely he'll say, am I calling the plays? Mm-hmm. Am I, how much autonomy do I get? Do I get the entire offensive roster, or am I going to have to give you four spots for special teams guys? Am I, all that kind of stuff. And he'll say, who is my wide receiver coach? Right. Who is my tight end coach? Who is my running back coach? Am I just the coordinator? Am I going to be given the running backs and the quarterbacks as well? All of that stuff was probably more likely. And if they say, well, what do you want? And he says, well, I'd like to have this guy and this guy come along with me. And they go, well, what do you want them to do? Well, we already got that guy. Then you start having those conversations. I don't know. But we'll find out pretty quick if there's going to be other guys who accompany him.
Steve, you got time for one more call? You got a minute here? Let's take a call from Nick in Los Angeles. Go ahead, Nick. You're on the air with us.
Hi. I just wanted to say that my favorite play was Steve blocking that kickoff. I think the Bills need a hockey enforcer. When New Orleans was headhunting, we didn't headhunt, Drew Brees. They got away with it. They kept doing it the whole game.
No, I disagree with that, Nick. I don't think this is hockey.
Nick, what do you mean? You mean like guys going out trying to pick fights and cheap shot or what? Is that what you're talking about, Nick?
When they're cheap shotting your quarterback, hitting them in the head, which New Orleans did, Jacksonville did, you need to hit their quarterback in the head just so the referees start calling a close game rather than saying,
Well, I'll tell you what, Nick, it would help.
Do that. I'm sorry.
It would help if your D-line got close enough to actually reach out and touch the quarterback, too. I mean, we didn't really put that much pressure on those quarterbacks. And when you get good pass rush, once in a while, a lot of times you do end up hitting their quarterback a lot more than your quarterback's getting hit. Plus, I heard, even on here on WGR after the, I think it might have been when Tyrod went out the first time in early in the season, or maybe it was Peterman when he got hit in the snow game.
Yeah.
They were going crazy about how he got hit in the head when he was diving. Well, listen, when your quarterback's going to run, the only time he's not going to get hit is when he's sliding feet first. Every other time, he is going to get hit, and he's going to get hit hard, and he's going to get hit in the head because he's a runner, and running backs are fair game like that. So if you're going to have a quarterback who's an athlete who tucks it and runs once in a while, he's going to get lit up. And if you're going to play against a guy like Drew Brees who never runs like that, he's never going to get lit up. So it's always going to be a trade-off in their favor, not your favor.
Steve, you're going to cover the Super Bowl for us for the show, huh?
Yeah, we're going to be down there Monday through Friday. I don't know what I'm going to be doing Monday. I think it might be a travel day.
Yeah.
But, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we'll be there doing some stuff, getting some interviews.
That'll be good.
Maybe if I can get some of my CBS guys to stop by and say hi.
Just remember, as far as dealing with Minneapolis and the cold, you can't put it on if you don't take it with you.
I will be checking a bag.
Right.
Checking a bag filled with hand warmers and mittens.
That's right.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, guys.
Enjoyed Steve Tasker from the Bills Wall of Fame, the NFL on CBS, joining us here in studio. Donald and I back to wrap things up. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater. The preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Phil Savage on the show earlier today, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, and he spends his football season as a color analyst on Alabama football. He talked to us about the Bills' new offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll.
Well, I think Brian, first of all, comes from a background where you cater and play to your strengths. And when he got to Tuscaloosa last year, of course, is an adjustment. You go from the NFL now to college players, a 20-hour rule in place, running quarterback returning in Jalen Hurts. And so, you know, they really built their offense around a quartet of running backs that they had, plus the dual set nature of Jalen Hurts. And then Calvin Ridley was their best receiver. He declared for the draft just the other day. He'll be a first-round pick. And so all told, I thought Brian did a nice job.
Phil Savage talking to us about Brian Daboll. Our thanks to him. Our thanks to Trey Wingo and, of course, Steve Tasker, who joined us here today. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. We're back tomorrow with a couple of guests, including Lorenzo Alexander will be with us tomorrow, right? You got any beefs with Lorenzo? You got to air out tomorrow?
No, but we can make some up.
You always do. We're looking forward to that. That's coming up tomorrow on the show. Want to thank our crew today, production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood, our producer, Jay Harris. We're back tomorrow at 12 noon with the Thursday edition of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.